Danny Boy. I'm going to change this to Oh Billy Boy. The Steves are calling. From Kev to Kev and little Ryan too.
You like the Weird Al Yankovic
WGN. Who is wearing green today? Oh, Billy Boy, let's have a kick-ass show today.
Well, you just turned a sad song into an even sadder song.
Thank you, I've done my job.
I always thought this song was sad, but never until just now did I realize it's really sad.
Wait till my limerick later.
Oh, you got a limerick planned?
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Don't. Hi, everybody, it's us. It's Bill, it's Wendy, it's WGN,
did
it's
you
St.
Just
Patrick's
get there,
Day.
You've never heard that one? Oh, he's so young.
He enjoys it every time.
He's green, if you will.
He is as green can be. Welcome to the show. Please call in or text in at 312-981-7200. We'd be thrilled to have you.
Already drinking the green beer. Woo!
Are you already having some? Did you have some ready?
I don't like it. I know it's just food coloring, but
that's
I don't like
it.
It does things to your body, too. I don't like that either.
Purple.
Purple?
I've got a dentist appointment today. Should I do some green beer?
My dentist gives me rum chata afterwards.
Oh, that's not normal in
any
way.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
The old green tooth joke. They love that.
Oh, that's good. What time's your appointment? Tooth hurty?
I like that. That's a good one. That's a classic right there.
I'm 10.
I don't think that really applies to today, though, the tooth hurty.
If he has a dentist appointment?
I guess. Anyway.
Yeah, that it fits in.
You're not in my mind, okay?
Gladly, I'm not.
I followed, Michael arrived in Dublin today for his school choir trip to Ireland, and they landed at 5:39 a.m. Ireland time and went right to the parade.
They did. Now, here, please ask him, because this is your son who is visiting Ireland for 9 days or 10 days.
Yes.
Ask him this, because this is what I've always heard about St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, that somehow it's not anywhere near as big of a deal there in Ireland that it is here.
I've heard that too.
In the United States, or especially in Chicago. Could that be true?
I've heard that it's more of a holy day.
Yeah.
So any Irish transplants can call us 312-981-7200. I don't mean a heart transplant or something like that.
It would seem, if everything in the world was right, that if you were somebody who enjoyed St. Patrick's Day, what better place to be than in Ireland, or especially Dublin? But how is it that we would celebrate it as a bigger deal than the good people of Ireland? I don't get that at all.
Well, I haven't talked to Michael yet. The redhead has landed. That's all I got the text.
That's how they coded it. All the Secret Service agents who followed him said that.
But I want to ask him about the parade when I talk to him later, because it was the 100th anniversary of... It has to be more than that.
100th anniversary
of the something in Dublin. It couldn't be the parade, because it's been going on longer than 100 years.
Yeah. I only remember bits and pieces of the legend of St. Patrick's Day, and Kevin and I were discussing this earlier. The part that always stands out was that St. Patrick, evidently, from what I remember, drove the snakes out of Ireland.
Right.
So
they wouldn't bite you.
Well, yeah, nobody wants to be bit by a snake, but was it that big of a crisis in Ireland? Were the snakes that big of a problem? I don't know. I can't imagine
Bill,
a situation.
Have you ever seen the movie Anaconda?
I have seen Anaconda.
Well, loosely based.
Have you ever seen the LaToya Jackson nude photo with the snake?
I do remember that as well. Yeah.
Was it LaToya?
She's Irish?
Was it LaToya? Or
Everyone's Irish today.
Guess.
Yeah. So were snakes really that big of a... I feel bad if that's really the case. And thank you, St. Patrick, for doing that. But I can't imagine snakes just overtaking an entire country.
It does seem weird. And where does the corned beef and cabbage come in?
Well, he was obviously hungry after ridding the entire country of snakes. He had to have something. And Ireland, for some reason, again, from what I remember as a child, had a potato famine. They couldn't figure out a way. Maybe the snakes were eating the potatoes. Maybe two horrible things were happening at one time.
You've solved the mystery.
I did. I know this is... I would make the worst history teacher in the world, because I would only tell kids the things I remembered from when I was a kid. I guess I could look it up. I guess if only there was some machine that had data on it that I could look up. But
someday Al Gore will invent the internet.
Wouldn't that be nice?
You'd be the best teacher. You know how fun your class would be?
It would be fun.
You wouldn't learn anything.
No.
But it'd
be no
fun.
Room for that.
Hey, Donald, are you from Ireland, the Emerald Isle?
I am from Ireland. I'm from Balbriggan, which is north of Dublin.
All right. And what is the St. Patrick's Day celebration there in relation to the one we have here in Chicago?
It's St. Patrick, first of all. So it's a holy day. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Number one. And number two, this is the 100th anniversary of the Easter Rising when Ireland threw England out.
Oh, so this was a special day. All right. I thought it was of the parade. I just only read the memo halfway.
Not at all. Not at all. Sure, they have a parade every year, for God's sake.
I mean, mm-hmm.
So the parade would be nothing. But your redhead is in Dublin this morning. It's a lovely day in Dublin. I was talking to my brother a little while ago. It's a lovely day. I'm sure the redhead's having a grand time.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much. So do people celebrate and go as wild as we do here? Or because I know they say it's a holy day, but there are some celebrations.
Not at all. Sure, it's all you Yanks that go nuts over here.
I mean, I believe it.
In Ireland, we've had it all of our life. You guys just picked it up the last 50 or 60 years.
Isn't that something that we do it up bigger here than they do in Ireland itself? That's amazing to me.
The South Side Parade is the best one, right? I mean, that's the big.
There's two: the City Parade and the South Side Irish Parade are both, in different ways, huge parades. Very
and the
popular.
South Side has more heart, in my opinion,
and less alcohol.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Oh, Jesus, yeah. The South Side of Chicago is mostly Irish, but in Ireland, it's a holy day. You go to mass. You know, it's a holy day. It's St. Patrick's Day.
Can you get a decent Shamrock Shake in Dublin?
You would have had to blank me out if I'd answered you true, but you can't.
You can't.
Donald, I was packing some snacks for my son to bring on the plane, and I said, I forgot to get chocolate. And Bill goes, well, hey, no problem. They'll have Lucky Charms soon as you land.
There you go.
No, man. You'll get great. You get great chocolates. You'll get Cadbury's. You'll get Crunchies. You'll get Smarties. You'll get Cadbury Flake. I mean, that's all great stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh yeah.
We'll have a lovely and holy St. Patrick's Day, won't you, Donald?
All right, Mom. You do the same.
Thanks,
right.
Donald.
Did he call me Mom?
Yeah, he thought you were his mom.
So you guys think we've altered other celebrations here in the U.S.?
I wonder.
Oktoberfest, maybe? Cinco de Mayo? Casimir Pulaski Day?
I would like to bring St. Joseph's Day to the limelight because I'm half Italian.
This is the day that we celebrate
That's
aspirin,
in 2 days.
Right? Isn't it?
I think it is. When's your history class start? I really want to
I really
take
should
it.
Be teaching history class.
God.
But to Ryan's point... Have we done that? Have we taken other worldwide celebrations and localized them, made them a bigger deal? Come on.
We just want to find a way to celebrate, and that we will.
You don't think Corona sponsored the first Cinco de Mayo?
Of course they did.
And Jose Cuervo. They went in together.
Absolutely. All right, a quick break, and then a lot more show ahead. It's our St. Patrick's Day show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hey, he's from Ireland.
Van Morrison is from Ireland.
And the Pogues?
The Pogues are from Ireland. Uncle O'Grimacy.
Elvis Costello.
Yeah.
Declan McManus is his name.
Yep.
Thin Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy is from Ireland.
They're not so thin anymore.
Well, you know.
That middle-aged bulge.
Carbs. Wendy, you know what I found? I went on the computer, the device you were speaking of earlier, and I found a website called AncientOrigins.net and .net, and what they've done is they have helped us understand the history of St. Patrick and St. Patrick's Day. Would you like to hear the story?
Abso-freaking-lutely.
Kevin, is there some way you could find just some beautiful, quiet Irish music? Maybe some Clannad. Do you know the band Clannad?
Sinead O'Connor.
Sinead O'Connor would work.
Clannad, you're pulling out your musical knowledge.
Have you ever heard these guys? Clannad?
Yes.
Listen, is this them?
This is Thin Lizzy, baby.
Yeah, this is Thin Lizzy.
Rock and roll. Right. He just said, give me a second.
All right, for the Clannad. Almost any Clannad song will work.
Can you spell that for me?
Sure. Capital C-L-A-N-N-A-D. Clannad. They have a song with Bono from U2 that's actually very pretty. But
I hear he's Irish.
He's Irish as well.
Paul Hewson.
Yep. And his friend, The Edge, also.
I can't think of his real name.
Also Paul Hewson. Here it is. Listen to this. Listen how pretty. This is Clannad. Now, wait till you hear this girl's voice. Have you ever heard these guys before?
Yes.
They know what they're doing.
When I'm meditating, I listen to this.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dave Evans. David Evans is The Edge.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This is pretty, isn't it?
If this is your thing.
If you're, well, you know.
Too much vibrato, in my personal opinion.
It is bravado heavy.
Singing Goat. A la Stevie Nicks.
That was their original name of Clannad was the Singing Goats. That's Bono in the background helping out. All right, here's a little bit of history of St. Patrick's Day. You can turn it down just a little bit.
You know.
Over the centuries, the mythology surrounding the life of St. Patrick has become more ingrained in the Irish culture. St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, is credited with expelling all the snakes in Ireland, Wendy, all the snakes. And they say here that today, not a single snake can be found in Ireland. Can that be true? They don't have even one snake in Ireland?
Just trouser snakes.
But the true meaning of the casting away of the snakes runs much, much deeper.
I don't believe that there isn't one snake.
You've got to have a snake or two.
There's got to be pets out there, right?
There has to be.
Well, yes, they mean in the wild.
All right, but there's only a couple snakes. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt and go there's six snakes, let's say. Then this guy did his job. I mean, he's like the best Orkin man of all time.
Amen.
Does PETA know about this?
No. Don't tell them.
Yeah, how did he get rid of them?
St. Patrick was born in the Roman Empire. I'm sorry, in Roman Britain.
So he's not even Irish?
No.
He was Isn't born, that weird?
Donald Trump wanted to see his birth certificate, and they didn't have him back then, so he could not run for office in Ireland. He could be saint, but he could not run for office. He was born... Guess what year he was born? You'll never guess this. This is ridiculous what year he was born in.
Two.
The year four.
Oh, darn it!
You
could have
won.
Close.
Oh, you could have won.
I didn't go over, so I might have won the Price is Right Showcase.
You could have won a stuffed animal, but not now.
A stuffed snake.
They don't even have those in Ireland.
Carnivals suck there.
Nothing snake related. When somebody rolls two ones on dice, nobody can say snake eyes.
They just call it eyes.
Eyes. That's all they say. Somebody rolled an eyes, they say.
Pardon me?
According to the Declaration...
Whose Declaration?
I don't know. It doesn't say. He was kidnapped by Irish raiders at the age of 16 and taken to be a slave in Gaelic Ireland.
Oh, my gosh.
There he spent 6 years working as a shepherd. That's what they did back then with kidnapped people. They forced you to be a shepherd and eat shepherd's pie.
Well, you know, the Irish wool is out there because Michael's going to sheep farm to see all the sheep herding dogs, shepherds, if you will.
That will be exciting.
You made fun of me before, and everyone texted in who went there and said it was really amazing.
I guess. But what happens, like, after you've seen the sheep, what do you do? Like, somebody will go, there's the sheep over there. And everybody nods and goes, there they are. And then what do you do?
The herding dogs herd them. That's got to be pretty cool to see. I don't think they spend a lot of time there, I'm hoping.
I guess not. So, while his true name, this is St. Patrick's real name.
Paul Hewson?
His real name, well, it is not Paul Hewson. I don't know how you say this. I'll just spell it out and you pronounce it as you see fit.
Spell
ready?
Slowly.
All right, this is St. Patrick's real name. Which I don't even think I'm supposed to divulge, but I'm going to. His first name is M-A-E-W-Y-N. Maywin?
Yeah.
Maywin. His second name...
Or last name, as most people say.
Last name, right. Right. Well, this was the year four, Wendy. Nobody knew back then. In the year four, they were lucky they even knew what names were. His last name... His last name is Cruel, but you want me to spell it?
Yeah.
I'll spell it. You tell me how you pronounce it. S-U-C-C-A-T.
S-U-C.
Yeah. Suck it. It's the first time anyone's ever said that on these airwaves, I bet. That's how his last name was. I would also go by the name St. Patrick. I would beg somebody, please make me a saint. I can't have this name. I've been kidnapped and forced into a world of shepherdry. I don't want this.
Bill, Saint Suck It has such a ring to it.
It does. All right, a quick break. I think there's more show after that. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And I like pints of Guinness. And I like shots of whiskey.
Do you like Guinness beer?
I have to say that it's a little too thick for me. I like my beer a little bit lighter, but I know now there's other Guinness options.
I tried the Guinness Blonde. It is so good.
That's what everybody's saying.
My husband,
not had it yet.
The old McInerney, drinks a Guinness not just on St. Patrick's Day, but Guinness beer. You and I were talking about this because our goal was to have only people who have achieved a Guinness Book of World Record to be on our show.
That's right.
We're trying That's to normal. Make that better and happening all the time.
Right.
So we started talking about Guinness beer, and I have to be honest with you, I didn't see the connection between the Guinness Book of World Records and Guinness beer, but there is, and there's a guy we're talking to right now who's been called the walking encyclopedia for his ability to remember facts and trivia. His name is Dave Farrow, and I already forgot your name. What is your name again, Mr. Farrow?
I love that. Hey, thanks for having me on. I got to tell you guys about some amazing studies where scientists are getting mice drunk and studying their memories. This is what we're talking about today, is beer and memory.
Dave, are they getting these mice drunk and having their way with them?
Oh,
because
Bill.
that would really be wrong.
You went a little farther than I was going to go there.
Good.
You really did.
Good.
All right, so how this all started was, look, I am in the Guinness Book of World Records for memory. The Guinness book was actually created by Guinness Beer, if people want a little bit of trivia from the Walking Encyclopedia. That's how it started. These little Guinness records, as we call them now, started off as one-off things that were written on bottles. To kind of get conversation started at the bar. And then eventually, it's kind of like, you know, like how they write something inside a Snapple cap.
Snapple stole like from Guinness, didn't
they? Yes, they did.
They totally ripped it off, yeah. But here's the thing. After a while, there were so many of these, people started getting into fights in bars because they wanted to, you know, argue over who was the fastest or smartest or whatever. And so Guinness published a small book just to stop everyone from arguing. And it turns out the sales in this thing took off. Because it was, you know, the first real time that somebody actually put all of the obscure, strange, weird records in one place, not just Olympic or sports or something, but all of them in one spot, so you could settle arguments. So all the bars started buying them. It became the Guinness Book of Records. It's actually one of the best-selling books in history.
That is a nice little tale.
And how long has this been going on for, Dave, did you say? How many years we've had the Guinness Book of World Records?
Oh, my. Well, I do know that the Guinness Brewery, there's a bit of trivia with the Guinness Brewery that they have a lease that's a 99-year lease.
Yeah.
So they really think long-term. But I believe the Guinness Book of Records, I don't know the exact date, but I believe it came about in the 70s, that they split off and became two different companies. It was actually bought by Ripley's, believe it or not, the people who did it. Believe it or not, it was bought by them.
Huh. That makes sense.
Here's the thing, though. Since I got in the Guinness Book of Records for memory, I thought, hey, you know, I kind of have an affinity for these people. I never really drank the beer beforehand, but now that I got in the Guinness Book of Records, sure. I thought, okay, I'll try the beer. I started to like it, and people thought, well, is that the secret to your Guinness record memory, is Guinness beer? So I started to look into it, and there's actually a bunch of evidence, a bunch of really cool scientists that have been studying alcohol and memory. Now, this actually started with some very, you know, real smart science that has to do with neuroreceptors. There's something called NR1 subunits. It's inside the hippocampus. It has to do with how your brain stores memories. So essentially, this neuroreceptor can be triggered by alcohol, and that's where people started doing this. So what the scientists did is they took the mice, and they fed them a diet that would be the human equivalent of about two beers a day. So your blood
alcohol isn't on that diet. I'm sorry, but who is not on that diet right now?
Well, every day at work, I'm on that diet.
Sure.
I'll for whiskey sometimes.
No, but what Dave, when you say the human equivalent of two beers a day for a mouse, that is, it's about an ounce, maybe
a drop.
Yeah, a drop. That can't be that much beer, can it?
Yeah, well, but you can test by blood alcohol level. So it's a 2.5% blood alcohol level is what we're talking about. So well below the level of, you know, drunk driving or you know, legal limit and things like that. It's just you might start to feel it. Maybe you'll just notice that you feel a little bit more relaxed, but it's not to the point of feeling a buzz. So that's sort of feeling. And the interesting thing is these mice actually performed better on a bunch of cognitive tests.
Wow.
Memory tests where they were supposed to, you know, recognize things, you know, so you'll show pictures and you'll have like the cheese behind one picture and then see if they remember which one it is later because that they get the reward if they remember, that sort of thing. But here's the interesting thing. They also tried to go, you know, to the extreme. They got the mice drunk, and I just picture the conversation they were having, you know, in the middle of these universities going, let's get them drunk,
right?
You know? And they're just, you know, they got nothing better to do on Saturday afternoon, I guess. But as it turns out, they got them almost to the point of a toxicity level, and their cognitive function went way down. So alcohol helps with your memory in two ways, people. It can help you in moderate amounts to have a better memory, and it also helps you forget if you really need to forget things. And that's
so the good news is you'll forget the guy you were with if you're a girl, but
right.
you will remember his name.
Oh. Right.
Actually, there's really one funny thing about that. The one type of memory that improved with getting these rats drunk was what we call emotional memory, memory that has to do with danger and like, you know, if you're going to get if you're going to step on a pad and get shocked, this is what the mice, they do to mice to show danger, just a mild shock. But so essentially, you won't remember the person's name, but you'll remember that you hate his guts.
Wow, that's a plus.
We're talking to Dave Farrow. He created the Farrow Method. You could visit his website at pushbuttonmemory.com. Your Farrow Method has been used for people suffering from dyslexia, ADHD. I have a couple of ADHD kids, and it's tough to remember things sometimes. We're going to take a quick break, and then can you help us try and find a way to help us remember someone's name? Because seriously, that is my biggest problem in life.
Absolutely. That technique is actually very easy to learn, and we'll touch on it when we get back.
Perfect. He's Dave Farrow, and we are Bill and Wendy. You can call us at 312-981-7200. It's 720 WGN.
Dave Farrow is here. He is the creator of the Farrow Method, a surefire way to help improve your memory. His website is pushbuttonmemory.com. Dave, we're getting a lot of texts from mice who want to know how they can sign up for that program where they drink all day.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for the human trials.
I just want to say responsibly, don't drink and squeak to all those mice, please. Dave, Wendy brought up a very good point. We all want to have a better memory, so there are keys to do this. Obviously, you're the best in the world at it. Help us through it. What are these keys?
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the first things, she was talking about remembering people's names. One of the first things is to actually pay attention to the name. This is the simplest thing you can do, but it does take training. There's a bunch of studies on this, but basically we are all egomaniacs at heart, all of us. So no one's immune from this. And when we meet somebody, we are actually thinking about what we're going to say and how we look and, you know, that sort of thing so much that we tend to miss the name the instant it's said. You know, you meet somebody, you shake their hand, they say their name's Mike. While they're saying it, you think to yourself, oh, man, well, what am I going to say next? Or that shirt looks like a shirt that I have or something like that.
Dave, you are 100% correct, because the whole thing is I don't listen when they say their name. I really don't.
Absolutely. Well, here's a little trick that I want you to do. Do this for about a week. So 7 days, it's a little bit of a mental, we call this awareness techniques. And if you've ever heard of awareness techniques, it's like, it basically means, you know, it's like you'll say a mantra every day or you'll, you know, pay attention to something every day, you know, to kind of change your focus. Well, this is a really neat one where you simply look around your office or as you walk to work or anything like that. And anytime you see a person, in the back of your mind, tell yourself, gee, I wonder what their name is. And that's all you say. And then you move on to the next face and you go, gee, I wonder what their name is. And what that does is by asking the question again and again, it makes your brain focus on that. And it actually makes you incredibly curious so that when that random person does come up out of the blue, they go to shake your hand, your first instinct is, oh, I wonder what their name is. And then they say their name and you're much more likely to remember it. That one little exercise will make a world of difference to a lot of people.
That really makes sense because a lot of times if we run into a listener on the street or something, and, oh, listen to the show, love you guys, I'm like, oh, what's your name? And as they're saying it, you're absolutely right. I'm thinking, okay, where do I go next with this? You know, and
how can I get some money out of them?
No, I don't think
sometimes
that.
You do. Yes, you do.
I don't. That's
all
you.
Right. All right.
But so just start the little mantra, I wonder what their name is, and just keep saying that so then when I meet someone, I will be wondering what their name is.
Yeah, and it's just the funny thing is there are some people who do this naturally. They automatically think everybody else is a jerk because they don't do it. And I will say, you know, battle of the sexes time, you know, women are much more likely to do this than men for whatever reason. But anybody can train themselves to do this. Just ask yourself that question, you know, maybe like 10 times a day when you see people, even if you know what their name is, even if you're looking at your spouse and you go, yeah, I wonder what their name is, in the back of your head, it just builds up that curiosity. I know it sounds,
but don't say it out loud.
No, that ruins it.
No, don't. Yeah, don't say it out loud or people will think you're kind of crazy. Now, the next thing you can do is actually try to visualize a name. So I have a trick for my name. You have to kind of practice a lot to get good with any name because there's a lot of different names out there. But essentially, if you hear someone's name, you know, like Wendy, for example, if you can visualize it, you're much more likely to remember it. So, you know, if I were to meet you in person and I didn't know you ahead of time, if I thought of Wendy's hamburgers, which I'm sure you absolutely hate because you probably heard that before, but that gives it a context. That gives my brain a physical object that has, you know, weight, size, depth, height, you know, dimensions to it that means something, and your brain can visualize that. You can't visualize a Wendy or a Dave or a Bill or a Mike, but you can visualize an object.
All right, because I've heard to kind of think who that person looks like. That will help you remember their name, but it backfired on me because I have a friend named Jim, which is my husband's name, so I should know this guy's name is Jim, but he looks like Tom Arnold, so I call him Tom all the time, even though I've known him for years.
Yeah. That actually is a backfiring technique. It doesn't work. Don't do that.
Well, that's his fault for looking like Tom Arnold, isn't it, Dave? He's being inconsiderate.
You think he likes to look like Tom Arnold?
He's being inconsiderate.
I totally didn't even think of it that way. You're absolutely right. So I'll give you an example for my name. I go on stages all the time. You know, I speak at colleges, for example. Just minor plug there. Go to
pushbuttonmemory.com. I'll finish your plug, and you can find out where he's going to be.
Sure. So my last name is Pharaoh, and I actually put on an Egyptian pharaoh hat to get people to remember my name. So once I put on that hat, people don't just remember it for an hour. Like, I come back the following year, and they still remember my name. Obviously, I'm not Egyptian, but it's just a little object that reminds them of my name, Pharaoh. And, of course, you can go to Push Button Memory to find out more.
Okay, but so they remember your last name, which I guess is more important in the world than a first name. But, you know, if you're building a relationship with someone, I'm not going to every time I see you go, hey, Mr. Pharaoh. Hey, Pharaoh, what's up?
Well, no, of course not. I mean, normally first names are actually easier to do this with. So when you start to get into the habit of visualizing people's names, it's just like the asking yourself the question thing. It's going to feel weird at first, but then when you get into the habit of it, it becomes second nature. So if you meet somebody named Mike, you'll think of a microphone, and you picture them, you know, speaking into a microphone. Next time you see them, that image, as crazy and silly as it is, will actually pop into your head. There's actually the main part of my system uses a survival mechanism. There's a natural mechanism in the brain that allows you to memorize things without repetition. All of you guys have used it before. It's not super mysterious or anything. But usually you only use it when something crazy happens, like you witness a car accident or, you know, you see a birthday party or something, you know, something really, really surprising, like a YouTube video that's really viral. Something sticks in your mind. That's using that mechanism that does not need repetition. All we're doing is kind of using a little creativity, kind of visualizing some things in our heads to kind of wake up our brain and trick our brain into doing it.
Dave, this question isn't fair to ask you because we only have a minute, but I'm curious. The reason you're in the Guinness Book of World Records is at some point you were able to memorize the exact order of 59 decks of cards. For people who can't do the math in their head, that's roughly 1,500 cards. That's over 1,500 cards. How in the world can you do something like that?
Well, it's actually over 3,000 cards.
3, is it really? Yeah.
Yes. But who's counting, really, aside from the Guinness Book of Records? No, but that was supposed to be a joke. But anyway,
we got it.
I will say the best way to understand this is to think of how your brain reacts to a movie. So essentially, I have a code and a system that turns these playing cards into this sort of running movie in my head. I'm kind of painting a picture in my mind as I go through the cards, okay? A lot of people, you know, understand that because, we've played games with kids. We understand that. And, of course, this is probably a lot more advanced, but it's the same sort of principle. I'm kind of turning it into a movie. If you think of a movie that you love, mm-hmm. you could watch another movie, and that's not going to knock the last movie out of your head. There is no limit when you have something creative in your mind. And that's how we can achieve, you know, a memorization of thousands of bits of information instead of just, 10, 20 in a row, is because we make it creative. And once it makes it something creative and fun and interesting to your brain, you actually don't have any limit. The limit is in your short-term memory when you're trying to memorize by repetition. Once you get into this long-term memory, the sort of memory triggering technique that I use, there is no actual limit to the amount you can memorize. And we've done this with languages. I've memorized 1,400 words of Cantonese in a weekend one time.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
We did this with medical students, you know, memorizing every single bit of their anatomy work. thousands of thousands, well, hundreds and actually well over 1,000 different bits of Latin and Greek terminology. But the point is, we take it one at a time. We'll turn it into something like a silly picture, and obviously I'm oversimplifying it.
Right.
But you know, we use the system to kind of make those links. The brain wakes up and pays attention to that, and then we move on to the next one. And before you know it, you have this catalog of funny pictures, of weird pictures in your head, and you remember it just as well as you remember my last name. There you go. See, it sticks.
How come we can remember things we don't need to really know? Because we, you know, especially you, Bill, just this trivial minutia that is rumbling around in our brains, we never forget that, but important things we do.
Absolutely. You know, your brain has different rules for memory than you do. You think a phone number is really important. You think a fact or a figure is really important. But your brain thinks that anything survival related is important. And it actually has a type of a tuning, if you will. Some people remember some types of facts different than another. This is actually a theory I developed called memory modes. So we were able to show, for example, that sports fanatics remember all sorts of things that are physical, even physical comedy, like a Three Stooges or something, but they won't remember location information, like where they parked their car or number information, that sort of thing, unless it relates to, you know, a jersey number or a statistic or something that relates to that physical thing. Your brain fine-tunes into what you find most fascinating. And essentially, you know, I'm here to fill in the rest. If you want to study something, if you want to, you know, learn how to play the guitar or learn a language or go back to school and study, chances are you're going to have to memorize information that you don't like, and that's where the technique comes in. It kind of, you know, tricks your brain into liking it.
Do you have a book out? Because I know it's the Pharaoh Method, and I know we can go to pushbuttonmemory.com. Do you have a book?
Yeah, I mean, you can search my name over on Amazon, but I have a really good deal for your listeners on pushbuttonmemory.com. I strongly suggest you don't just take tips on this or just look at YouTube videos. There really is an advanced system, and my push button memory system, it's actually a 10-hour course. So I'm not doing an infomercial or anything, but I just really have to stress, if you want to do this well, you have to practice. You don't want to go up to someone named Mona and call her Lisa because you used the Mona Lisa as an image in your brain and you didn't practice this technique enough, you know? You do have to, like, you know, go through the lessons and go through it. But it's pretty simple. The way I explained it, you know, if you enjoyed this interview, you'll enjoy the program. It's just it's something you can learn in maybe a week or two, but it's not a couple of minutes, just learn the
right. You have to invest time. Your brain is a muscle. You need to work at it. You need to work it out. Pushbuttonmemory.com. And Dave Pharaoh is his name. Is there a certain discount code you mentioned as special for our listeners?
We've got the special up right now. They'll see the discount. I'm all ready for you guys. I love you guys.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dave.
Hey, thank you very much. And have a drink on me.
Oh, we will.
Done. Thanks, Dave.
Go to pushbuttonmemory.com. I'm completely intrigued by this.
Yeah, how about that? All right, a quick break, some news from Ryan Burrow, and then more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. In the studio with us, with Bill and Wendy, is Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com.
Irish much?
I wonder, Irish with the name Patrick McDonald, is there some Irish somewhere way back, way, way back, maybe?
Yes.
Maybe?
Look at what he's wearing.
You look like a human
McDonald,
crayon, a green crayon.
The first McDonald came here in 1858.
From what county?
One single guy. Cork, I believe.
Yeah. Cork. You say it, Cork.
Yeah, Cork. My father should call in and tell me where we come from.
So Irish on both sides?
No, my mother is Slovak.
Is she really?
Yeah, 100% full-bred Slovak, yeah.
So you're just Shirish like the rest of us, Chicago Irish.
But, we will also have you review films on Slovak Day.
Very good.
I promise we will call you that day.
What is that?
What is that?
I know it's coming up. I know it's coming up soon.
Chicago's a big Slovak town.
Oh, it is. I know it is. I know it is.
Blessings to that community, by the way.
You wanted to talk about some of your favorite Irish films.
Yes.
We'll get to what is coming out in theaters, but there have been some very, very fine films about Ireland and the people of Ireland, right?
I kind of focused on some of the quasi-modern ones, so let's say in the last 25 years. You know, I like the films that have a little Catholic burden on them.
Sure. So why wouldn't you?
Last year's Brooklyn really did it for me.
No, yeah.
And the Calvary from the year before did it for me as well.
Remind me what the Calvary is.
Calvary was a film about a priest who had found out a secret from one of the townspeople and literally had to go around town with the burden of that secret as he climbs his own Mount Calvary. Of course, Calvary is symbolic for the mountain where Jesus was crucified. For those of you who wondered at home,
I think I saw that. That was a little bit of a whodunit.
Yes, right, wasn't it? Yes, yeah, it was sort of a whodunit, and it was a confession that he had to deal with personally.
Yeah.
And you saw the townspeople as he made his journey.
Yeah,
very interesting. And Brendan Gleeson was the actor who played the
You know how I figured out, and I have to say, semi-spoiler alert on this, I figured out who the killer was by the billing at the beginning of the movie of which actors were in the movie, because there's an actor who's not in the movie much, but he got second billing, and I went, well, that guy must be the murderer, because he hardly shows up at all in the movie, but he got top bill or second to top billing.
That's right.
Yeah.
They just went for the guiltiest person in town, and they couldn't determine it by the Irish, so... And The Snapper. Did you like The Snapper?
Roddy Doyle?
Yes.
Yeah,
Oh, I love that movie, too.
That's one of the movies, I believe, and I know it's dated. I think it takes place in the 60s or the 70s, but aren't there a lot of pregnant women smoking scenes?
Yes,
there
I
is,
do
right?
believe
smoking,
there is.
That stand
smoking
out
and
in
drinking.
Mind. Now we know it's bad, but a lot of our parents...
Yeah.
There was a comedy album from the early 60s that I once heard. It was about, having children because everybody did back then, and as opposed to now.
Right.
But they were talking about having champagne to celebrate because the doctor said it was okay.
Yeah. How about that?
And, tar and nicotine helps, too.
Listen, I like to drink more than anyone, and I did not drink at all during my pregnancies or smoke.
Yeah,
of course.
It's not that hard to do.
All right.
But boy, when the baby's born,
that make up for lost time.
Where's
the Commitments.
Mother?
You mentioned The Commitments, which is
a great soundtrack. It really is good.
Can I throw one your way?
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen this. Did you ever see the movie The Secret of Rowan Inish?
No.
Please find that movie. You'll love it.
All right.
It's half fairy tale, half believable, but it's a really enjoyable Irish movie.
Now, The Quiet Man. Have you
love
seen
it.
That?
John Ford's The Quiet Man.
That's pretty much the essential one.
God, listen
year.
To the film goers here. I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
If you've not seen it, it's John Wayne proving, because people always say, well, John Wayne can't really act. He's just a big, larger-than-life figure. But when you see him in this movie, he can act. It's him and Victor McLaughlin.
Yes, and Maureen O'Hara.
Yeah, it's really good.
And what's that called again?
The Quiet Man.
Should be on Turner Classics tonight.
Turn your volume way down when you watch it.
I actually have heard of that and The Commitments. That was all I've heard of that you guys mentioned.
Yeah,
that's right.
Both really good. Patrick McDonald is here to talk about films. He'll tell you what's opening this weekend, what you should see and what you shouldn't. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Patrick McDonald is here, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, FilmAutonomy.com,
right.
And chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour. You can go to ChicagoFilmTour.com. It will be starting up again soon, right?
Yes, April 2nd, first weekend in April.
Before we get to this week's movies, Patrick, I know you have a little inside information on this.
Yes.
The Star Wars group is making some offshoot movies.
Yes, they are.
Not just the movies that are part of the Star Wars lineage, but little side stories, and one of them has to do with Han Solo, and they have narrowed down the acting field. There will be five actors who are now in contention to play young Han Solo. What do you know about this?
Well, I interviewed one of them yesterday. The new movie coming out next week, Everybody Wants Some, a quasi-remake of Dazed and Confused. First thing I did for these young lads was to bring my actual picture from 1980 in my dorm room and give it to them.
Oh.
Nice. That's very nice.
I just said, nailed it, Pat, 1980.
Yep.
So, one of those guys is Blake Jenner, and he is the lead actor in Everybody Wants Some. He's the main focus in the movie. It's an ensemble piece, but he's the focus, and he could not talk about any
They swarm
elements.
To secrecy.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he says...
But this is one of those roles. No, actors want any parts in movies. That's why. That's good for business. But especially if you play the lead in a Star Wars movie, that's a catapult to fame and fortune, right?
Yep. Yeah. That's $20 million a picture, baby.
Wow. So when will they make their decision? Probably soon.
They're shooting very soon. I would say very soon.
Yep.
But it is down to Alden Renwick from Enreich from Hail Caesar, Jack Rayner from Transformers Age of Extinction, Taron Egerton from The Kingsman, The Secret Service, Jack O'Connor from Unbroken, and the aforementioned Blake Jenner. So those are the
Miles
five.
Teller, right? Did you say
Well, they, yeah, I guess on the outside there's Miles Teller and Logan Lerman from Percy and
right.
the Lightning
So none
Thief.
Of those names are huge names now, but if they get this role, right. we'll all certainly know who they
it's
are.
It's a catapult to stardom, my friend, just all like right. I being on Bill and Wendy.
Sure, it's the same thing. Let's talk about the movies that are coming out this weekend, Patrick.
All right.
Eye in the Sky.
Eye in the Sky, excellent military film about our modern drone warfare. It all comes down to a bit of morality as they sit in their seats far away and decide whether to blow up a house with possible terrorists in them. So this is, it reminded me of Failsafe. There was a lot of morality in the movie Failsafe when they went beyond the zone and they were heading to Moscow to drop the bomb. And it's just, it's the same sort of atmosphere, very tense, a lot of people involved, including world leaders. And it's done step by step, directed by Galvin Hood, which who I interviewed, and he really had a passion for this film, and I think it's excellent. It stars Helen Mirren, of all people.
I love her.
As the colonel who is making the decisions in the war room.
Oh.
She had one piece of clothing for the movie, and it was a military garb, and she was quite taken aback by that.
Yeah.
But she looks good in it, and she looks good in everything.
Well, yeah, what doesn't she look good in?
And it's Alan Rickman's final role.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. And he has a great last line. Everybody's going to be very happy with this last appearance on screen. A nice 4 out of 5 for Eye in the Sky.
It's sometimes rough to see the work of an actor who had recently died.
Yep.
I remember James we talked about that with James Gandolfini.
Yes.
That
yes.
It was bittersweet to watch any actor or actress in their last role,
yes.
you know, because you think about the legacy of their work and how it's coming to an end.
Right, and you never know how that movie will turn out. So at least with Rickman, he got a pretty great film to go out with.
There's another nice
yeah,
yeah. Another Divergent movie. I think this is,
yes.
is this the final of the Divergent
yes,
movies?
Yes, this is the third chapter of it, but they're splitting it into two movies a la Harry Potter.
And this one is called Detergent, am I reading this
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Yeah.
I'll
right.
see it finally. They should have a double feature with Joy.
Hello.
Yes,
hello. Hi-yo. Yes, it's Allegiant. They got away from the Divergent Insurgent.
They did.
Resurgent.
Yeah.
Rhyming.
Allegiant?
Allegiant.
And does this one also take place in Chicago? Because the earlier ones, yeah?
It does. Chicago is what I don't understand about the movie ever, of the three I've seen, is that the buildings are crumbling in it, and nobody's into real estate anymore.
Right.
In the post-apocalyptic. You'd think some squatter like the guy Streeter, who made Streeterville, would own the city.
Fix it up. Make it look nice.
Making a Mad Max sort of thing. But,
yeah.
you know, it just is running out of steam.
Oh.
The series is simply running out of steam. Shailene Woodley is the main, hero named Triss. And in each and every movie, they use her in a different way. And in this one, she's sort of in the background. You know, I don't know. It's just a lot of green screen stuff. And Jeff Daniels playing a CEO again. Apparently, he's going to retire playing a CEO, ironically.
He's been doing that quite a bit.
Yes, he has.
Yeah. All right, so my guess is you're not going to give this a very high ranking.
2.5 out of 5.
2.5 out of 5. And you need to have seen, this is one where you kind of need to have seen the previous movies to understand what's
yes,
going
absolutely.
On, right?
Yes, absolutely. Or, you know, be a fan of the novels and go in that way. I mean, there are so many fans of the novels. In fact, I did do an interview for this, and the woman who was coming in was concerned because she's one of the, like, quasi-villains in the novel. So
oh.
She wants everybody to know that she's a good human being.
All right.
That would be Nadia Hilker.
Yeah.
She got the role by sending an audition tape. She was
really?
A German actress. It was total luck. She was in L.A. for a pilot. Her management set her up with the audition. And
that's
she
a
got
great
the
story.
Role.
I love really hearing awesome. That happens. Yeah. Give us one more quick one.
One more of
the bronze.
Melissa Rauch from Big Bang Theory. She plays Bernadette on The Big Bang Theory. This is her first breakout movie. She plays a gymnast who got the bronze the 2004 Olympics. And kind of takes her hometown to task for it, pretends she's a hero all the time, and has to come to a transition on that.
Comedy or drama?
is a comedrama.
Dramedy?
More comedy. Yeah. More comedy than drama. So, but unfortunately, it didn't work for me. I did talk to Melissa, though, and she's delightful. So
did you scold her, or how did you treat her?
Up from 2.5 to 3 out of 5.
Because you talked to her?
Because I talked to her.
All right, that's fair. Patrick, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Happy
Patrick
St.
McDonald.
Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of Chicago.
Patrick, of course, the film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com and FilmAutonomy.com. If you want the tours, which are starting up very, very soon, ChicagoFilmTour.com or 312-593-4455.
Thanks,
for information. You're welcome. We'll take a break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
My kind of town Chicago is. My kind of town Chicago.
Frank Sr., of course, with our city's anthem.
Yeah.
Cue ball.
We found out yesterday the sad news that Frank Sinatra Jr. had died at the age of 72, heart attack.
Too young.
Too young, without a doubt. We had him on the show in November, and it was an interesting interview for several reasons. Number one, he's the son of Frank Sinatra Jr., one of the most renowned performers of all time. And number two is sometimes Frank Jr. would answer questions that we didn't ask him.
Well, when we had him on back in November, he seemed a little crotchety to me, if you want to know
the truth. Do you think
he
was crotchety? Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, it was lovely talking to him, but I mean, listen to this. This goes back to November, and you were commenting on what a great show he puts on.
Yeah.
And just he seemed a little gruff, I guess, in his response. It's coming.
Frank, I saw you perform in downtown Las Vegas about 20 years ago. You would do a song or two, and then you would tell a story about somebody there in the band, all the guys in the band. The audience got to know them. And boy, when the night was over, we all had a great time. You did a wonderful job.
Well, I'm glad I got through to you. I was practicing a philosophy which had been imparted to me by a man who made television, who taught me to do that. And that man's name was Gene Roddenberry.
Mm-hmm.
Does that name mean anything?
He's the creator of Star Trek.
Yes.
Correct. And Star Trek, when it began, was just a television series. Next year will be 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not realizing that it became a way of life. And Mr. Roddenberry, who was the wisest man I ever knew and a very close friend, he said to me one day, because Star Trek within the industry was referred to as, quote, the thinking series, mm-hmm. unquote. I said, Gene, how did you make that work? He said, there are those people in the word I hate, marketing, who believe that the public in general wants to put their minds in neutral and have everything spoon-fed to them and not ever have to think. But I was convinced when I created Star Trek, and this is how he put it, somewhere on the other side of the picture tube, there was an intelligent life form waiting to be entertained. And this is the way I built my show musically.
Was that the man you expected him to give credit to?
No, it was not.
I thought maybe his dad.
Right. Right.
Do you have to think when you were watching Frankie Jr. sing? I mean, aren't you just there to be entertained?
I was lost. I mean, again, to sum up the question, it's, I saw you in Las Vegas 20 years ago and you introduced
nice.
The band members.
Yeah.
What was behind that?
But Gene Roddenberry.
We found out that it was the creator of Star Trek that was behind that. If you listen just to Frank Jr. as part of the interview, it sounds like it was recorded in 1946. It sounds like Edward R. Murrow was sitting down with Frank Sinatra Jr. from way back. It's just the tone, the way he spoke. I can't explain it, but if I only heard that and somebody said, when was this recorded? I'd
right.
go, somewhere in the late 1940s, mid to late 1940s.
Look who his dad was.
I know.
So you're right. It's like very old school interview.
Yeah.
Very articulate.
Yeah.
Very dramatic,
right.
if you will.
He had a very affected way about him. And I guess that's what happens when you grow up and you're the son of Frank Sinatra, I guess.
Yeah, and WGNRadio.com/Bill and Wendy, that's our live blog that you can go to directly, and there'll be a link to the full interview that we had with him this past November when he came to the Arcata Theater mm-hmm. to celebrate his father's 100th birthday. Mm-hmm. We'll also put it on our Facebook page as well. You can listen to the whole interview, because there was also another little story how he inspired his dad to get out on stage, because his dad, Frank Sr., was a little tired, didn't really feel like performing, and Tom Jones fits into the equation somewhere. Yeah. So inspiration from Frank Jr. Frank Sinatra Jr., the son of the legendary entertainer, long musical career of his own, died Wednesday, according to manager Andrea Kaufman, 72, which is just, how old was Frank when he died? He was older.
I want to say in his early 80s. It would make sense if he was 81 or 82, somewhere in there.
Kaufman, his agent, said Sinatra died at a Daytona Beach, Florida hospital. Singer Nancy Sinatra said on her Facebook page that her brother died of cardiac arrest. Sleep warm, Frankie, she wrote.
Ugh. You know, yesterday we did a segment toward the end of the show about Hollywood's biggest mysteries, and one that wasn't on what we were talking about surrounds Frank Sinatra Jr., and that is his kidnapping when he was very young.
Because I forgot about that.
It's the strangest thing. To this day, there are people who believe that he was in on that kidnapping. The person who they found responsible, there were three people, if I remember, that they found responsible. One of them was a friend of Nancy Sinatra's, of his sister, Frank Jr.'s sister. But there are many people who believe that somehow he himself was involved in some sort of an extortion plot, that it was a faked kidnapping. I looked online last night, and you'll find just as many sites that tell you it was legit that will tell you that he was in on it. So I still don't know which is true. I do know Frank seemed, his dad seemed the type to where if you riled him, and there's plenty of evidence to this, he would somehow get you back. And he seemed to not want any kind of retaliation after this kidnapping. I know they locked up one of the guys for quite a long time. The other two got off a little bit easier.
Well, according to CNN.com, because I had forgotten all about this or just didn't know of it, Sinatra followed his father's singing career path and was a 19-year-old. 19 years old. He's on tour. He was kidnapped in 1963. After 3 days, two of the men collected a $240,000 ransom paid by his father, while the other abductor let the son free. Days later, that kidnapper confessed to his brother, who called the FBI. Kidnappers were nabbed within hours. At trial, the defense team claimed it was a publicity stunt to help the young singer's career, but there was no evidence to support that. The men were convicted. But think about it. You're 19 years old. You know, you got a sister, Nancy, and there was another sister, too. I can't remember her name.
I'm blanking on the name.
All right. So, but Nancy had a big hit with These Boots Are Made for Walking, although really she didn't do a lot of stuff.
Tina Sinatra,
yes,
by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. And so he's the youngest one. He's the boy. He's 19. He probably is not feeling his daddy's love. I'll see how much my dad cares about me. And think about it. In 1963, $240,000.
Right.
Quite a large sum of money back then.
And again, a strangely uneven sum of money.
Yeah, that's weird.
I never understand why. I don't know.
$250,000 would be too much.
Right.
We got to stay under it.
That's $250,000 we're talking about. Let's say $240,000. We'll make a deal with them.
Got to make it even. Can't go $249.99.
Right. I don't understand the reasoning for the $240,000, but that was what they agreed upon.
That is a weird amount.
But all right. So think about it. You're the son of the guy who at the time is the most popular performer on certainly in the United States and probably the world. You can't live up to that.
No way.
So life, I would imagine, it's a mixed blessing to be the son of somebody of that stature. I don't know how you
and
do it.
And there aren't that many people of that stature.
No,
you know
aren't.
What I mean?
Right.
It's friggin' Sinatra.
Right.
In 2012, Sinatra Jr. told the Guardian newspaper in the UK that the allegation of a faked kidnapping was a stigma he lived with for years.
Yeah.
Sinatra also said that when he was very young, he saw his father more on a movie screen than he did in person.
Now that's sad.
Well, his dad was busy.
I know, but that's...
He was a good father. Here's a quote. He was a good father as much as it was within his power.
That doesn't sound...
But it was
that doesn't sound pure at all.
I know,
does
but then
it?
He became his father's conductor and stuff.
Right.
It's like, you know,
right.
Boo hoo.
So maybe later on they made up for lost time, maybe. right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but I'm saying if you're going to complain about him being a bad father and now you're going to work for him and now sing all his music, like, come on. He was an entertainer. I mean, really.
Oh, yeah.
That man was busy.
Yeah.
Mom Sinatra took care of things, didn't she? A lot of dads back in that time worked a lot.
Right.
Imagine
right.
your dad working all day and then, you know, singing and performing every single night.
That would be rough on the audience because he's not a good singer, but you're right.
You're mean.
You're absolutely right.
All right. Tom is on the line with us. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Gotta tell you, I love the show. I listen to you guys just about every day. But I wanted to comment on when you were talking about when you did the interview with Frank Jr. last November, and you said that he was kind of crotchety. I heard an interview probably about in 2007, and they asked Frank Jr., they said, well, whenever you are interviewed, how come you never really talk about or you're kind of considered aloof? And Frank Jr. responded by saying, well, I'm a man of very little words, as was my father.
Yeah.
And when you commented and you said that a lot of people thought that, you know, Frank Jr. was in on the kidnapping himself, or even they alluded that Frank himself was possibly involved in it to kind of up his publicity a little bit. I don't know if you remember that duo, Jan and Dean.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Dead Man's Curve.
Well, Dean Torrance did an interview one time, and he was talking about when they made that movie, Ride the Wild Surf.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to be in that movie and kind of like singing, and they automatically, when they started to do the filming, they were just cut from the film because they said one of Dean Torrance's close friends was involved in Frank Jr.'s kidnapping.
Oh, wow. So there was that backlash, huh?
Yeah, well, to say the least, and you said that if somebody kind of bluntly pissed Frank off, Frank Sr., how you would automatically be kind of like shunned.
Yeah,
well, they made that kind of clear that if you had any type of involvement with my son's kidnapping, you would pay the price.
Oh, how about that? I didn't know that. Wow.
Thank you so much for that little nugget.
I did see that you're talking about when Frank Jr. was at the Arcata.
Oh, yeah?
And Frank Jr. said himself that he doesn't really like to be out in the limelight that much, as did his father, because he didn't really want to talk that much about his dad's legacy. And I kind of found that a little bit ironic because...
Sinatra sings Sinatra. He was there to celebrate the legacy 100 years of his father.
Exactly, but a lot of people felt that, you know, there was a little bit of animosity between father and son because, like you said, he was in a position where he was always making movies, always recording a lot, and he wasn't around with his family to be that sort of father image. And I don't think that Frank Jr. had that feeling because you could tell that when he was on stage with his dad, Frank Senior would always look to his son to be able to make sure that he was doing what he was supposed to
do
on stage.
So
and,
still controlling him.
Yeah, you kind of put it kind of in perspective. But
hey,
you know,
Tom, we got to run. Well, thank you so much for this info.
Tom, thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
We have more on this, too, how their relationship got better.
I hope it did get better. All right, we'll take a look at that. We're talking about the late Frank Sinatra Jr., who died last night, very sadly, age of 72. More with us, Bill and Wendy, next, WGN.
You had me, and then you lost me.
Boo-hoo.
I loved that SNL. Was that Joe Piscopo doing it with Sinead O'Connor?
No, that's Phil Hartman.
Oh, yeah. Joe Piscopo did it after Phil died.
No, Piscopo preceded Phil Hartman.
He did?
Yeah, it was Joe Piscopo first.
Phil Hartman was
changing
better.
The face of comedy forever, and then Phil Hartman did the Frank Sinatra after that. But yeah, that's one of the funniest scenes, the Sinatra group. Very, very funny.
was Sinead O'Connor. That was great.
Yep.
We are talking about the passing of Frank Sinatra Jr. We talked to him this past November right before his show at the Arcata Theater, oshows.com, if you'd like to see other people there. And there's a live blog that Kevin does every day for this show. You can go to WGNradio.com/Bill and Wendy. Follow along as we make it happen. And you can also go to our Facebook page. We'll put that full interview up.
Yeah.
I had mentioned the quote, according to CNN.com, on an article today. He was a good father as much as it was within his power, said Junior, mm-hmm. about Senior. But in his father's last years of touring, Sinatra Jr. was the music legend's band leader, and the two had a very, well, a closer relationship, it says.
Yeah.
Sinatra, whose voice and looks were very much like his father's, were released about a half dozen albums, and he told The Guardian 4 years ago, quote, "My lack of success does not trouble me at this stage in my life."
Oh.
Well, the fact that you bring that up, it is troubling you.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I would imagine.
He recently told the Daytona Beach News Journal that he wasn't upset that his life as a singer was nowhere close to his famed father's career. Here's the quote for him. "I think my generation, when I came along in the early 60s, the type of music that was in vogue in society in those days had moved on to another kind of music," Sinatra told the newspaper. And then he added, "I was trying to sell antiques in a modern appliance store."
That's a beautiful analogy.
But it's not true. Look at Harry Connick Jr. Look at all these people. Chris Isaac, sort of. Bublé.
Yeah, who came along and kind of picked up the mantle. But you have the problem if you're the offspring of one of these people, and I think Lisa Marie Presley would agree with me, and I think Julian Lennon would agree with me. Paul McCartney's son is a musician. Zach Starkey's a musician. To reach the pinnacle that Sinatra or the Beatles or Elvis reached, to do it two generations in a row is as impossible as could possibly be, isn't it? I don't know how you could do it.
You can't.
You can't.
So you don't think about it.
You can follow the same calling and be a musician, but you have to know that the odds are against you to reach what they reached. It's just impossible.
But I guess it's not the time to reach that, and I understand what he's saying about selling antiques in a modern.
Yeah.
But
he's
really,
right.
Look at how popular Bublé is.
Yeah, he is. And it is.
And Harry Connick Jr., it's that same thing. And
it
you wondered, wow. You know, I've been to a lot of rock concerts, and then I saw Harry Connick Jr. I'm like, this was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen Bublé, but he won me over. I didn't want to like him.
I know.
But he's so good.
He makes you like him somehow. The other thing, really quick, and you can hear this in the interview, we talked to Frank Sinatra Jr. about an episode that he did of The Sopranos where he played himself. There's a poker game going on with Tony Sopranos and his underlings and other guys, other family guys from other from competing mafioso teams, and Frank Sinatra Jr. is playing in this game. And I thought that scene was so beautiful and so telling because Sinatra, for years and years and years, did his best to dispel the rumors of being tied in with the mafia. And there was Frank Jr. sitting with all these mafia guys playing poker. It was just a kind of a nod of his going, yeah, my dad was involved.
Right.
Who are we kidding? You know?
But of course there was a little, competition going on he and his father.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned Family Guy. He was also on Family Guy. Frank Sinatra, this is what Seth MacFarlane tweeted. "Frank Sinatra Jr. was a friend to Family Guy and a friend to me. I'm saddened at his passing, but grateful to have known him. Rest in peace, Frank."
Yeah.
And so Sinatra's father, 82, died in 1998 of a heart attack. So they both died of a heart attack, basically. 82, 72, Sinatra Jr. survived by his sisters Nancy and Tina Sinatra and a son, Michael Sinatra.
Hmm.
Very sad.
That's it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's the luck of the Irish.
Yes, it is.
Did you have your shamrock shake today?
You know, I've not had a shamrock shake in years, and I miss them tremendously.
They've ruined them.
They're not as good as they were.
Mint.
Yeah, in the early days of shamrock shake, what you got was a vanilla shake with green food coloring in it, and then they added just a little bit of mint to it, but
enough
you say this ruins it?
I'm not a mint lover.
I'm not a mint person either.
Oh, you guys.
Don't you remember them just being vanilla?
Yes.
In the early days.
With the green food coloring. Like a green bagel.
Right.
Here's an idea.
Right. Right.
Are they pre-made in the little, whatever it is that they make the shakes in? Or can I get a vanilla shake
pre-made.
And have them put, thank you, pre-made?
They're pre-made. Thank you, Kevin.
I used to have to fill that machine, and it was quite unpleasant.
And Kevin didn't work for McDonald's. He just went from McDonald's to McDonald's filling their machines. That's how much he cares.
He was shaking his moneymaker.
Right.
Because if they could just give me a vanilla shake and put green food, I'm just going to get a little thing of green food coloring and put it in the car.
I bet you could do that. Why couldn't you do that? That's fine.
The mint has ruined it. I love the little Google thing. I know you didn't like it. If you go to google.com, which everybody does to search things, unless you're binging it, I like that they correspond all their little Google artwork with the holiday.
Right.
And at first I'm like, this is boring. It's just a green Google. But the L is green, and it turns into a shamrock,
right,
and it jumps on all the other letters and turns it green, and I was amazed by it.
You were enchanted.
It's
I was
fun.
Watching you look at this.
And then I made you watch. You didn't even watch.
How did they do this? It's magic.
No, I just said it was cute, and I showed it to you, and you didn't even watch it, did you?
It takes more than that to impress me. I don't know.
I am
easy. It takes
easy.
A little more than that.
Ask any guy in my high school.
I like when we don't even have to slam you. You just slam
yourself.
Well, because
I know it's coming. I can read your thought bubble. Do you know that? So I figure I'll just do it myself.
Speaking of Shamrock Shakes, I mentioned his name earlier, but there was a time when McDonald's used a spokesperson for the Shamrock Shake,
oh, yeah,
and he was Uncle O'Grimacy, and what he was an
a
Irish.
Blob.
It was the Grimace, but with more Irish stereotype thrown at him.
Like he was green.
He was incredibly green. I believe he smoked one of those pipes that you always see leprechauns smoking. You know, those long-stemmed kind of pipes.
Like a Sherlock kind of?
Yeah, like a Sherlock Holmes kind of a pipe.
I've never seen a leprechaun smoking a pipe.
Oh, yeah. There's
really?
They have. They smoke.
Really?
Leprechauns, yeah, they have the same needs and wants and desires as us real folk.
They got a pot of gold. They don't need that.
Well, there's that. They do have the pot of gold. You'd think they'd take better care of themselves so that they could live to spend the pot of gold. But they're, you know how leprechauns are. They don't think for the future. They think for the moment.
Wow. He is just a big, green, fat blob.
And it's been years. Yeah. Wendy's got a picture of him up on the computer. For years, he was the spokesperson until they realized at some point, we're really stereotyping the Irish community. Maybe we should hold back on him just a little bit.
Well, what's wrong with him? He's wearing he's got a shillelagh.
Yeah.
Irish people have a shillelagh.
At all times.
He's wearing an ugly vest with shamrocks on it.
Which Irish people do.
He's drinking a shamrock shake. I don't think he's anything in a bad Irish light.
No.
Although I'm the one who still said paddy wagon. I didn't know why they... I didn't know we've outlawed that term.
It was so funny. This we were going back a month or two ago, and I don't even remember how it came up, but you used the term paddy wagon, and both Steve Bertrand and I didn't say anything, but you could tell there was an uneasiness, and then Steve was the one who corrected you and said, you know, that's politically incorrect. You can't say that. But I was watching you learn right before our eyes that term had a negative connotation toward the Irish.
And you know I didn't say it to be negative.
No,
because
I know.
I did learn
I know.
That moment.
I know. But Uncle O'Grimacy was in the era when, what would be a good example? Okay, the Frito Bandito is a good example. Remember when we were kids and that was the spokesperson for Fritos, the Frito Bandito.
Aye.
I am the Frito Bandito. And then all of a sudden they realized, or somebody made them realize, this could be considered a negative stereotype.
Of a bandito, not just
You know that and I know that, but you could see where some people might be sensitive to it, maybe, right?
You know what? If Donald Trump becomes president, we're going to see the Frito Bandito again.
Right. They're going to haul him off.
They're going to bring back the Taco Bell Chihuahua.
Right. Right.
Everything will come back. Uncle O'Grimacy, just for the heck of it.
They'll bring him back. All the stereotypes over the years will all come back.
Do you know about McDonald's secret menu and you can get a Shrek shake?
I didn't know Shrek Shake, but I know that they are one of the... Almost every fast food restaurant has what they call the secret menu, where you go in and you ask for something that isn't on the regular menu, but they know about it and they'll make it for you.
And it's basically just half chocolate shake and half shamrock shake, so it's like a chocolate mint.
Okay, that sounds amazing. That I would have in a minute.
Well, I would like you to do an
I would
experiment,
love that.
Although you're not having sugar again,
yeah,
are you?
I don't
you?
Need sugar right now.
If you go to WGNradio.com/Bill and Wendy, we have a live show blog that is going on, and perhaps there's a picture of Uncle O'Grimacy there, and if there isn't now, there will be soon, Kevin, right?
An artist rendering, I believe, right?
Yeah, just because I don't remember him looking at. Somebody says, tell Wendy if she drinks enough tonight, she might see a leprechaun smoking a pipe.
You might. You could.
The leprechaun in my dreams vapes.
Right. Your new breed of leprechaun is smart enough to know that all that smoking of the pipe is not in his best interest. I was going to say his or hers, but I think all leprechaun are there. I don't even know if there are women leprechauns. Are there?
And what would they be called? Leprelass?
A leprelass. Yeah.
I don't know. Look at the things we cover on this show.
I think, like, as I'm running through the Rolodex of leprechauns I've ever seen in my head from literature, I think they're all male, which doesn't make sense because you had to have a woman at some point.
Sexist.
It's like the Smurfs having Smurfette. There was one female Smurf. Boy, was she busy and tired at all times. Think about that role. You're the only woman
blue.
In Smurftown. I know. Yes, she was. As blue as could be.
I guess some of them have pipes, but not the one from Lucky Charms. He has no pipe
because
you don't smoke when you're eating cereal.
How would that look?
Do you know how to spell leprechaun, by the way? Because this was tough for me to just throw out there.
I'm going
to
go with L-E-P-R-A-C-H-U-A-N.
One letter off.
Oh.
Leprechaun.
Oh, is it A and then the U?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, good.
This would be the day to know this. All right. Boy, do we have a lot of stuff coming up, including Peggy Kaczynski, a local baseball story that has now gone national. We'll tell you what that is in a little bit. And then Anaya Lee Willibus. She is the youngest published chapter author in the United States. What were you doing when you were 10? Because she was writing a book and having it published. We'll talk to her later on. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
I have
a
correction.
Even says dancing. Doesn't
I know,
say
I saw
dancing.
That.
It says Danson.
Sarah Palin wrote that copy.
Sarah Palin and Bruce Rauner got together to write this.
You're right. Takes two minds to come up with that.
Yep.
By the way, it's chicagotribune.com/sportsplus.
Oh, I forgot the plus. All right. Moments ago, Wendy and I were discussing a character that you don't see around McDonald's anymore, and that would be Uncle O'Grimacy. He was, for several years, the spokesperson for the Shamrock Shake. He was Grimace's uncle. Because a lot of people wonder about the family tree of Grimace at McDonald's, and if you're making a family tree for the Grimace family, Uncle O'Grimacy is his uncle. We found, this is about a week or so ago, but it still holds up. These are things that a McDonald's drive-thru worker wants you to know. This is a guy or a girl that for a time spent their career working that window at McDonald's, and there's things that we're not aware of because we're on the outside looking in, but they know it the world better than us.
Well, kind of like the chocolate mint shake that someone texted us.
The Shrek shake, right?
Yes.
Half chocolate, half...
Why is that Shrek?
You know, I can't figure that out either. He's green, but the chocolate part doesn't make sense. I don't know.
Couple of layers like onions?
He wants us to know, he or she wants us to know, they don't specify who's writing this, that regular is not a size. When you're ordering a drink, don't say, I want a regular Coke or a regular Sprite. Say large, medium, or small. Although I think most people would assume regular is the medium.
Is what? Why
right?
would you assume that? Although, think back, it was you just had one size drink. Now
right.
it's like super size,
I know.
Mammoth size.
But now don't you think everybody gets a large at McDonald's because it's a dollar?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but it doesn't fit in your cup holder sometimes.
Oh,
I know,
mine does.
I know
it's
that,
the perfect drink.
Hmm.
It's perfect
too,
size.
It's too big. I mean, it does fit in the cup holder because if you've noticed, they've made adjustments to the cup so it's real thin at the bottom so it does fit
it
in your cup
in.
Holder. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's so tall that I knock it over with my elbow when I'm driving.
Oh. You could
so
sue
medium's
them.
The way
you
to go.
You should sue them. Who was it that for a while, I don't know, maybe they're still doing it, was doing you could get any drink for a dollar. It's up
McDonald's.
To you. You pick the size for
McDonald's
a dollar.
McDonald's does that.
See, that's brilliant because that makes you believe, the consumer, that you're in charge of it. You're like, oh, I could take the small or the medium, but I know what I'm doing. I'll take the large for the same size.
I can't believe Kim Gordon gets the large because it's almost as big as she is.
Oh, but see, I get extra ice, so that way all my extra ice goes in there, and then I still have room for my drink. It's perfect.
All right, I'm doing that.
I'm an iced tea girl. Yeah.
Say a Kim Gordon. Just go, Kim Gordon me.
Boy, I can go to McDonald's and get a Kim Gordon, and I can go to Taco Bell and get Kevin Richter. What is it when I order a Kevin Richter at Taco Bell?
Well, you got your cheesy gordita crunch, and you can get a volcano taco. You can get a standard taco, just some sort of taco.
With the cheesy gordita crunch.
But they'll
crunch.
Know Always when you go cheese. In.
All right.
They'll know. They'll know. How about this? Ordering sauces at the drive-thru window will then take you 10 times longer. It says a 10-piece McNugget meal comes with two sauces for free, and at some McDonald's, you'll be charged for any additional sauces. It says that, I think, on the window at
it
all
does
of them,
now.
Doesn't it?
But what's wrong is, and let me just give you my tip, you can get a 20-piece McNugget for $5.99, I think.
Yeah.
So a 10-piece McNugget is like $3.99. Just go for the gusto and get the 20-piece and share with a neighbor.
Sure.
Just knock on their door. But here's the thing. If you get a 20-piece, they only give you 3 sweet and sour sauces. Now, to me, that is totally wrong.
It's out of proportion.
And they charge extra if you get extra sauces, right?
And it's like, okay, you give me 2 for the 10-piece.
Right.
So 2 times 2 would be what? Because I'm getting the 20-piece.
You don't want to pull math skills out.
And
that's
what is it? I think it's 20 cents for an extra thing. Really?
Is it? Yeah. Yeah. Well, it says if you pull forward to the window and then ask for a 3rd barbecue sauce after you get your 2 free, I, the person who's working the window, will take your extra money, run over to the closet register, wait for the person who's actually assigned to that register to finish with their customer, and then ring up your sauce separately.
Then just give it to them free.
Wouldn't it be easier?
Yes.
It would be so much easier, and I don't think it would put McDonald's out of business.
I'll tell you what, I'll pay an extra $1 the next time I go through the drive-thru, so that'll cover 5 people who get it free.
That seems nice of you.
Saucing it forward.
That's what it's called. You're outsourcing. It says here, I didn't know this about McDonald's, if you order a cup of water, they're going to charge you for it? They don't do that,
do they? It's the cup. That's what they go by. Sometimes they just have the clear one that doesn't cost them money.
They have courtesy cups, yeah.
Yeah.
They could do that.
But if you say a large water, they're going to charge you
for that.
It's only a $1, really. Who cares? It's cheaper than a bottle of water.
Even Starbucks gives you water for
right. Like extra sauces, some McDonald's locations will charge you for a cup of water. It's only a few cents to cover the cost of the paper cup, but your drive-thru person has to charge you. So please don't order the water at a drive-thru window in the hope that you won't be charged. It won't work out that way. That doesn't seem right. Water should be free.
Well, they could squirt it in your mouth, and then it would be free.
Right. Fine with that.
It's just the vessel.
Right.
Don't you always pay for the vessel bill?
Eventually.
Bring your own cup to McDonald's.
Yes.
Yep. They say here, I am not going to give you free food. It says just because, they allude to the fact that just because you know the person working in the drive-thru window isn't your key to getting free food. However, I will say this, and I will not name names because I believe this person still lives in the area. When I was in high school, we had several friends that worked at McDonald's. I think this holds true of most people. And at the end of the night, we were told that the excess food is either thrown away or given away. And we would time it that we would get there right as it was closing. And our friends who were working behind the scenes always found a way to get us a hamburger or 2 or 3.
Do you know, I do not know anyone who worked at a McDonald's other than our own Kevin.
Nobody.
No, isn't that weird? How many McDonald's are there? I don't know anyone that worked at a McDonald's.
This same person, again, who will go nameless. I almost gave his initials, but why even do that? You know when they would do the, they still do kind of the Monopoly game, right? That's been going on since we were in high school, where you have to, you know how that works. All right. So he would sell us a bag of the tickets that weren't opened for $10, like a huge bag, like 500 or 600 of them for $10.
You still never won, did you?
Never. Not even once. Like, you would get the occasional free apple pie or
small fry.
Something like that.
No, I just called you small fry.
Have you ever heard of a winner, though? Like a big winner there? I don't think I've ever seen it published.
Somebody wins, right?
I am doing the Jewel Monopoly, and I am going to win the $1 million or the $500,000 dream home.
Let me guess, are you one away from winning it? Just one. Well, then you will probably win it.
What are you looking for? Because I go to a different Jewel. Maybe I can help you out.
And, you know, I know that it's based on the products you buy because there's little things that says double points or whatever.
Yeah.
I swear they like Jimmy Mac better than me because he comes home with like maybe 15.
Yeah.
I come home with, at the most I've ever gotten, 8.
They give it to you based on how much you buy that day.
No, it's based on...
Oh, well, they have special stuff.
Right.
If you get it to Tino's Pizza, you get 5 of them or something like that.
I spent $280 and got like 6 tickets.
Oh, that's not enough. I'll hook you up with my friend from high school. He'll give you a bag of them, and you still won't win. But it'll
$20.
I know. See what happens. All right, a quick break, and then a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Isn't this some beautiful music?
It really is.
I love this. Very energetic. I want to say Neil Hefti Jr.
If you're right, oh. God, you didn't let me finish, Kevin. If you're right, I was going to say, I will give you $1 million. But I didn't spit it out, and he jumped in and said, you're right.
I think it is. Is it Kevin? Is it Neil Hefti Jr.?
It's Neil Hefti, but for 10 bonus points, do you know who performed it?
Nelson Riddle and his orchestra.
I don't mean who wrote it. I meant who performed it.
Well, Nelson, originally composed by Neil Hefti, performed by the London Music Works Orchestra.
No, that's the version we just played, but this is that's a slightly different version from the TV version.
Oh, how do you know these
because
things?
Because he is Bill Leth.
Qantas never crashes. Definitely never crashes. The reason...
You know, I am the luckiest woman in all of Chicagoland to sit in a studio with you for 4 hours and a half each day.
Agreed.
I'm telling you, man, I won the lottery.
Yes, you did.
I don't care about the Jewel Monopoly or McDonald's.
This is better. This lottery is better. The reason that we play that beautiful song, the theme from Batman...
Who's it by?
...is Neil Hefti Jr.
Hefti.
It's spelled differently. Oh. H-E-F-T-I. But pronounced the same. It turns out, Wendy, and this is exciting for those of us who are young or young at heart, that there is an actual Batman, a real-life Batman. He calls himself Bike Batman. He's like the real Batman, but he...
Except he rides a bike.
Well, no, he doesn't ride a bike, but he helps people get their stolen bicycles back.
He is a superhero.
He is a superhero. It says here, this is in Seattle, Washington. The Seattle engineer, the Bike Batman... spends his free time online. Here's what he does. He matches reports of stolen bicycles listed on the bike index to bikes that are for sale on Craigslist. Very cunning. So he finds these. And then, pretending that he wants to buy the bike, he arranges to meet the thief. Sounds dangerous.
Yeah, but how many times did this work before people on Craigslist got the hang of this?
Maybe once or twice at the most.
Oh, that Batman guy. That bike Batman's calling.
You've got two options, he tells the thief. This according to the online Guardian. You can wait until a cop gets here, or you can just beat it. So far, Bike Batman has managed to return 22 bicycles to their rightful owners. Doug Brick is one of those owners. He never saw the bike rescuer's face. See, he's very mysterious, like the real Batman, which is how Bike Batman wants it. The modest local hero even asks for anonymity and for me to pronounce the word properly when interviewed. The impression that I got from him and the stuff that his wife said is that he's kind of an adrenaline junkie. This according to Sierra Bronson, another beneficiary of the Bike Batman. It's his way of giving back to the community. Bike Batman has taken steps to protect his safety, often calling the police and asking officers to accompany him. Now, if you're a police officer and you get a call from a guy, and I don't know if he calls himself Bike Batman when he calls.
He needs a better name.
Well, it's an alliteration. I think I know, but I don't like it.
It's stupid.
What should he go with? Is there a better name?
I don't know. The spoken one.
Oh, I like that. Ooh. I like that.
Batman sounds really stupid. I'm Skateboard Spider-Man.
They should team up. Those guys should team up. Police have even made arrests after half of his sting operations. Brian Hance, I'm sorry, who operates the Bike Index. That's an online site.
What is the Bike Index?
I don't know exactly what it is. I've heard of it, but I don't know exactly what it is. It says matching reports on stolen bikes that are listed on Bike Index. So I guess if your bike is stolen,
it's okay to say I don't know sometimes.
I don't know.
You have to register a bike because you know how there's like a VIN number or whatever it is on there. You can register a bike. It's simple, it's secure, and it's free.
Except don't you think, I've been riding a bike for years.
Never forgot, did you?
No, once you learn. But... I can't imagine if somebody stole my bicycle that the police would take that as a serious thing to look into and find my bicycle.
Dude, there are bikes that are like $2,000-$5,000.
Yeah.
You want your bike back then.
I know you'd want your bike back, but if, like, with all that the police have going on in their world, how much time, how many man hours would be spent looking for my bicycle? They wouldn't. They would just go, well, we'll get right on that, and then they'd throw that away. Would they spend any time looking for my bicycle?
Well, they're not going to go canvassing door to door. Do you see a bicycle? No.
I want a nationwide manhunt until I get my Schwinn back.
There's a little baseball cap on the seat. Have you seen the bicycle? It belongs to Bill Leff.
Right.
A caller just suggested that maybe this guy, since he is an adrenaline junkie, is stealing the bikes and then returning them.
Please, call unnamed caller, don't sully the good name of Bike Batman. He's on our side. He's not trying to make the world a worse place. He's trying to improve it.
That name has got to go. It's just...
Bike Batman?
It's terrible.
What about Bicycle Batman? You just don't like those two together?
It's just lame.
The spoken one. That's all right. Could, if we find the identity of this guy, because it's not, he wants anonymity. He doesn't, but if we find out who this is, can you suggest to him that he changes his name? It's better for business to call himself the spoken one.
Yeah, I'll tell him, get him. I said I wanted to talk to him, and you said that there is no name. He's anonymity, because then he'd have to say, yes, I am maybe stealing the bikes, and then looking on
Craigslist.
He's
not. The Bike Batman plays by the rules. He's not a criminal. He's one of us. He's one of the good people.
Isn't it more like Robin Hood, though?
Well, let's see. No, because Robin Hood stole from the rich and gave to the poor. This guy doesn't care about your economic status.
I guess.
He just wants people to have their bicycles back.
Why is Batman fighting with Superman? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, they are not getting along right
why?
Now.
Why? Do you know
they,
why? I'm
well,
serious.
It's always over a girl. I know there's got to be a girl involved. I believe it's
bigger than a girl.
What could it be?
I don't know.
It's got to be something.
What's happened to Batman's voice?
You have to, when you're Batman, you have to talk like this.
Since
you have
when?
To make your voice huskier. I guess you get more respect.
Christian Bale was the first one I really noticed doing it, but I guess Michael Keaton a little bit.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that when he was Batman. Adam West knew how to do it. Don't make your voice grumbly.
He was the best.
He was the best.
And he was like just like a cartoon version of Batman, which
right.
is what we all like.
That, right. Exactly.
They got too dark.
Right.
Very dark.
Yeah.
And Superman is
taken. I like the, you know, the pop and the punch.
Zap,
the,
pow.
Zap. That was the best.
That's what. That's how it
was
should
a good
be.
One, too.
Right. That's how it should
and
be.
And Zop, as we learned yesterday, one of the.
right.
And always excited when Batgirl made an appearance.
Hubba,
how about
hubba.
It?
Hubba, hubba.
Oh, you know what? We have to point something out to you, because you said that police, if you lost your bike or it got stolen.
I don't think it would be a top priority to the police of any city. I can't imagine them spending that much time looking for a lost bike.
Are you listening to this, Jack? Are you listening to Bill Leff?
Oh, yeah. This happened a while ago, like 10 years. I bought my daughter a Swin bicycle.
Yeah.
It was just a beauty. And it was stolen. You know, boom, gone, thin air. I got a call 6 months later from the police department, says, we found your bicycle, your daughter's bicycle. Okay, good. I'll come down and get it. What the thieves had done is they had cut everything off. The tires.
They stripped it?
They stripped it. They left the seat. And I said, well, how the hell am I supposed to drive it home?
That's it. Well,
first, they did get the bike.
They found it,
in their
so
defense.
Good for them, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet your daughter was thrilled to see her bicycle all stripped down to nothing.
Yeah, she was. So anyway, that's my police bicycle story. But, you know, it goes with the act.
You got it back.
Well, thank you. That's all why right. you need a bike Batman. Who needs a better name? And what good is that going to do when they find it 6 months later? Because tell me that you wouldn't get a new bike at that in that
you would, wouldn't
time
you,
frame.
At some point?
Did you ever go to a bike auction? I went a couple years ago
no.
at our local police station, and these are it's an auction of things they have taken from drug dealers and stuff, and they have the big dare truck out there, and there are a lot of bicycles, and you can bid on them if you have cash and just buy them right there, and a lot of them are recovered without seats,
of
or maybe
course.
This one it doesn't have a front wheel.
Right. Right.
But they're pretty inexpensive, so to go get a new wheel, they're in good shape.
Yeah, then it's
and
okay.
And you're sticking it to the drug dealers.
Take that, El Chapo. He tried to steal my bike.
He had an El Chopper bike.
El Chapo's driving around on a bike with a Davey Concepcion baseball card in the back spoke. That looks good. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got more show for you. You want to jump in? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride. This is my favorite song.
Of ever?
Well, of Queen. Well, yeah. I like Fat Bottom Girls, too.
Yeah.
And Somebody to Love.
I want to just quickly say, I know the police officers are doing everything they can to solve every crime they can. I just think that they prioritize, and probably recovering stolen bikes isn't at the top of their list. I'm sure police have found stolen bicycles and returned them to their owners, not at the rate that Bike Batman is doing out in Seattle, But your average police officer has a full schedule of crimes they're trying to solve, and returning your bike to you may not be at the top of the list. That's fair, right?
That is fair. And all somebody, right. 608, says, what's next, Bike Batman versus Scooter Superman?
I would go to see that. I would love to see that.
We might have a happy ending to a stolen bike story, and Jim would like to share it with us. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, Wendy? Hey, Bill.
Hi.
Okay, I had this bike for the longest time. No special thing. Kind of looked nice, but it was the brakes were bad, the tires were bald. And I rode it all the time. Well, I parked it beside my garage one night, didn't put it in. Of course, I come out the next day, and I look, and bike's there, and I'm doing some yard work. I look, and wait a minute, that's not my bike. Somebody stole my bike, replaced it with another bike that had really nice tires, really good brakes, and I still have it today. It's a much nicer bike.
Wow. So the bike fairy came and exchanged it?
Yeah. Unbelievable. They stole my crappy bike and left me a nicer one. So it was kind of a...
That doesn't make sense. I don't understand that.
Maybe it's that other caller who said his daughter's bike was stolen. Maybe it was her bike.
Maybe.
Yeah. So I put it in the garage the next night so it wouldn't get stolen.
Sure.
You learned, didn't you, Jim?
Sure did. Hey, you guys take care.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
You too. Have a great weekend.
Patty's Day.
There was a time, my wife and I were living in Rogers Park, and we lived in a building that had 8 units in the building, and there was a common area downstairs where everybody left things like, you know, if you had a small barbecue grill or
like
your bicycles.
Like a courtyard or something?
Well, it was inside. Oh, okay. It was like a storage room, not even at ground level, just at like a half a floor below ground level, so you could get in from the side entrance and you could park your bicycles there or any, you know, you could leave any kind of sports equipment there, baseball spikes or whatever. All right. So one night I was up late and I hear all kinds of commotion downstairs and I don't know what it is. And you know me, I'm very brave. When I hear commotion, I go in the closet and I lock the door and I cower in the corner. So I stay there. So then in the morning, we find out from neighbors that somebody had broken into that common room.
Oh, no. See, you should have gone down.
Well, I should have.
Get out of the closet,
Bill. I probably should have, but I did not. And they stole everybody's bike in the building with the exception of mine and my wife's, which made us feel...
Like you were the culprits.
Not like we were the culprits, but there's like, it's not even guilt. It's like, what's wrong with our bikes? If everybody else's bike is getting stolen, why weren't our bikes also good enough? Like, we should have been thrilled that we had the two bikes that were spared, but instead we felt like
our bikes suck.
Yeah, we must not have good enough bikes that they went in and stole 9 bikes and not mine or my wife's. How does that make us feel?
We felt awful. If you're going to go in and steal bikes,
right,
and you only have room for, say, 7,
right,
aren't you going to take the 7 best?
I guess so, but I don't know. I felt bad about it.
Perhaps the baseball cards in your spokes would have made noise when they were driving away.
Let's go with that. I think that's probably what the problem was.
Kate's on the line. Hi, Kate. We're talking Bike Batman. It's a very stupid name, but it's a great thing that he does.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also mentioned Adam West being the best Batman around. Mm-hmm. And we used to be out in Sun Valley and had a house out there, and Adam West lives out there. I've never met the man, but if you look up Adam West in the local phone books, it says Adam West, and then you go and it says, see, Wayne Bruce, millionaire.
Really?
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, honey, this is the funniest thing ever. So then you go up and you look up Wayne, obviously the last name, and when it says Wayne Bruce, millionaire, it says, please consult crime fighters in the yellow pages.
Wow.
And then you go to the yellow pages and look up crime fighters, and it sends you back to Batman in the white pages.
That's beautiful.
I love it.
Isn't that the funniest thing?
Yeah, ever? He's got a good sense of humor about himself. That's great.
Well, I was driving around, and I heard you all talking about it, and I called and talked to a producer, and he said, you want to go on? And I said, well, no, because I don't really know what it's all about. So I called a friend of mine out in Idaho, and I said, Carolina, go look this up for me. And she said, you really have a lot to do, don't you? Yeah. I said, well, I got to call my friends. We're talking about Adam West.
Oh, well, thank you, Kate.
We're your friends. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, citizen.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, top of the morning.
You as well.
I got to meet him one time at a comic book show, and he was, first of all, not only a very, very nice man, Adam West, but in spectacular shape for a guy that was right around at the time, this was about 4 or 5 years ago, probably around 70, but just like a rock, just built so strong. And at the time, remember at the time, he he was never heavy, but he didn't, that costume, the Batman costume, was very form-fitting, and there was a little extra Batman, I felt. Didn't you?
Didn't think there was extra. He was kind of puny, if you want to know the truth.
Well, he wasn't.
Thank you, Kate.
Like, when we think of our Batmans today, they're much more stronger
yeah,
and muscular.
When did that happen? The fake muscle armor?
I don't know.
See, I want my Batman looking a little...
You want him a little flabbier.
Well,
a little flabbier Batman.
It makes it, you know, like he's the real superhero.
Right.
He's more like the everyday superhero.
That's how it should be. I don't want my superheroes all strong and muscular.
I don't either.
I want them to look like real people.
When you met Adam West, was he wearing tights that day?
Not that day. He had pants on. I was wearing tights.
Well, the good news is that's why you keep yourself in such good shape, because you got to wear tights. And aren't they
just
uncomfortable?
I swear,
putting them on in the morning, if you just get out of the shower and you're wet, it's like you're wrestling an alligator.
Right. Right.
Kind of hard.
I wonder, because you asked earlier, why are Batman and Superman fighting? That's this new movie. There's a movie coming out called Batman and Superman Are Fighting. I think it's because maybe Superman said something to him, like, hey, you let yourself go. You got to, come on. We're superheroes. We're in the Justice League. Don't embarrass me.
A caller had actually addressed, if you really want to know why they're fighting.
Yes.
Apparently, Batman's a little PO'd at Superman because Superman, in his crime-fighting efforts, has destroyed a little bit of Gotham City. He's like, what's up?
Listen to
What's
this.
Good?
It's like the Real Housewives of Metropolis or something. That's what it sounds like. They shouldn't be fighting. They're superheroes.
I
they should get
the
bad
end,
guys.
They'll be
friends again.
They'll
you think
out.
They will at the end? I hope so. I don't want my superheroes angry at each other.
I thought they all get along.
Well, there's one in Marvel, too. All the Avengers are fighting with each other, too.
Well, that's the Civil War. That's,
Yeah. All the superheroes are angry at each other.
And just like the mutants, too, in the X-Men world.
Blame Donald Trump.
Can we blame Trump for this, Kim?
Can blame him for everything.
So.
All right.
He'll take the credit.
I know. It'll help him.
More votes.
Right.
That's
true.
Just it.
True. All right. A little bit of a break. Kim with the news and then more show. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Was it yesterday we talked to Kevin Powell, producer for the Steve Cochran Show?
It was at the end of the show.
And he was out at spring training, and he was telling us about Adam LaRoche and his son. It has exploded.
Mm-hmm.
We heard this at the end of our show yesterday, and now this woman has been all over the news today. Philadelphia, Dallas, Fort Worth, on the Today Show. She's not only a friend, but she's a friend of the show. It's Peggy Kaczynski.
Hey, Peg.
Hi, guys. Is this crazy? I mean, I don't even feel like I'm doing a sports story.
Well, it isn't. It's a family story as well as a sports story. Go through a little bit of the basics of what people need to know about this White Sox story.
Okay, so Adam LaRoche, aging veteran, signed as a free agent a couple years ago by the White Sox. Big contract, fell flat, just no production last year, hit 207, 12 home runs, very, very disappointing. And, oh, by the way, his son shadows him every day. So this year, as the White Sox are going over their entire team and thinking, what can we change? What can we do better? We owe it to the fans to put a better product out on the field. You know, they've had three bad seasons in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not just Adam LaRoche. Every player has been approached about, you know, changing, tweaking, maybe, you know, their pregame routines, maybe how they practice, maybe what they work on over the winter, things like that. And what they had suggested to Adam LaRoche is that his 14-year-old son, Drake, not be around the team as much. Not just 100%, which he is. He flies with the team. He has a locker with a nameplate at both Camelback Ranch in Arizona and at U.S. Cellular Field.
Mm-hmm.
He flies, he takes the bus, he's at practices, he is with them 100%.
And he wears, Peggy, doesn't he? He wears a White Sox uniform and he works out with the team. It's like he's a member of the team.
Okay, my only question here is why? Why? Why is this kid not in school?
Well, Adam LaRoche told the Washington Post 2 years ago when he was playing for the Nationals that he doesn't really believe much in school. He told his
school's for squares.
He told his wife that his son would get a much better education hanging out with dad in the clubhouse at the ballpark every day.
Sure.
Like Adam LaRoche did with his dad, Dave, who was a coach for the White Sox. You know, Adam used to come and hang out at the old Comiskey Park and shag grounders with Ozzie Guillen, who was the shortstop, and he hung out with the pitchers. And he wanted to do the same thing with his son, who he calls his best friend.
Wow.
So, all right, that's sad on several levels here. I'm sorry, because you bring your kid, you know, every once in a while, you bring your kid to work. You know, maybe you don't have somebody to watch him at home. Maybe you just want them to see you in a work atmosphere.
Right.
But it would, you know, I wouldn't even want my kids here every day with me, because then you can't, there's swearing, there's stuff that goes on.
You might hear your kids swearing, Wendy. You don't want to do that.
No, in the dugout, though, this is just not the appropriate place.
Mm-hmm.
Right, all the players now across baseball are countering, saying it's a family game. We've always been able to bring our families to the ballpark. The White Sox are not telling them they can't bring their families to the ballpark. They're not even telling them that they can't bring their kids inside the clubhouse. A lot of teams have rules that you can only bring them on a Sunday after a day game or something like that. So they were simply asking him to, quote, dial it back. Not just 50%, maybe something between 0 and 50%.
Peggy, a quick question. Who approaches Adam LaRoche with that suggestion? Whose job is it to do that?
Well, that's a really good question, because it was Vice President Ken Williams.
Oh, wow.
Not manager Robin Ventura, not the GM Rick Hahn. It was the Vice President Kenny Williams.
Wow.
And when I asked him, were there complaints? All he would say was, I'm going to keep that inside the clubhouse. So I have to think that whether there was a player or two who don't want to come forward and just wasn't comfortable with, you know, having this kid around, even though everyone said they love him and he's a great kid and never got in the way, was very helpful. Everyone agrees on that. It doesn't mean, like any of us, we would be a little uncomfortable if it was every day.
Right.
The jokes start flying, things get inappropriate.
Yeah.
You know, I joke saying, shoot, they don't even want us women in the clubhouse all the time.
So yeah, that's true, Peg.
Well, so what happens when another player says, well, I want my 13-year-old daughter to come in the clubhouse every day. I want her hanging around the team. I want her to have the experience that he's getting of being a big league ball player. Maybe my daughter's going to end up playing professional softball one day. I don't know. So Kenny had a really good point. You know, where did they draw the line? And if they think it's maybe affecting him, they just asked him to dial it back. And oh boy, did this just blow up everywhere.
Okay, so do you think this is real? Because it just seems weird that Adam LaRoche would just say, that's it, then I quit, over his son. It seems like there has to be more to this.
Well, you know, he's 35 years old. He had a horrible season last year. Definitely not worth the $12.5 million that this year he's, you know, still due $13 million. Retirement's a real hard thing to come by. It's a real hard thing to admit as a professional athlete. This kind of comes at a time when sometimes they make the decision for you, and I think in some ways, maybe it helped him make the decision that he was done.
But it's
was a convenient excuse.
But Peggy, that decision is a $13 million decision.
Right?
And wouldn't you find a way? I mean, for $13 million, you swallow your pride a little bit and say to your son, maybe sit out a season or two. Let dad work. Yeah?
How in the heck do you tell poor Drake LaRoche that his allowance has just gone down by $5?
And now, does Drake like going there? Somebody has just texted, stop judging Adam. He did the honorable thing. He retired with dignity. Let it go. No, we're not going to let it go, because that is not a place for a kid.
And he's never said. He has yet to speak. He left the team Tuesday morning. He has yet to explain. The players were very, very upset. They didn't want, there's a report today of them saying that they wanted to boycott yesterday's game and not play. You know, here's the thing that, you know, he did tweet something about, I thank the good Lord for all the time that they've given me, #FamilyFirst. So it does seem like he is saying that his family comes first at this time. And listen, this is his decision. This is his relationship. He has had a remarkable relationship with his son to be able to do this for the last 5 years. Really fabulous. It really is. He lives in a small town in Kansas. I don't know that the $13 million really means that much to him. He's made a lot of money, and I'm thinking he's a pretty simple, God-fearing young man that has done pretty well.
Yeah.
I don't know how much the money really does mean to him.
Do you remember years ago, Dusty Baker's son, Darren, I want to say, was like a, kind of the bat boy for the Cubs, and then he almost got mowed over by a player one time, and they put an end to that.
And Ozzie Guillen brought his son and sons to a lot of practices and spring training.
Right.
And they wore uniforms, and they helped out.
That ended well, didn't it, Peg?
Well, here's the thing. Like Adam LaRoche said, when he was a kid, he actually hung out with Ozzie's kid because Ozzie was a player at that time, and they all did it. Listen, there's players bring their kids to practice, to batting practice, all the time. His son actually hangs out in the clubhouse during games. You know, it's like he's a part of the team. Listen, it is any employer's right. If the product that you're putting out is not up to snuff, they have a right to say, well, we want to see some changes. How about you suggest what you can do differently that can help us with this?
If they were sitting on a World Series right now, Peggy, would this even be an issue?
No. No. But that's exactly what happens, Wendy, in all of our jobs. When we are not putting out the product to the level that your employer is expected, they start nitpicking at everything, and they look at everything. And I'm sure you could go to every player on that White Sox roster and ask, what changes have they made in their routine? And I'm sure quite a few guys made some changes in their routines because last year wasn't good enough.
Peggy, here at the station, Kevin, our producer, his weird Uncle Marco used to hang out with us almost every day, and he always wanted to have tickle fights, and we finally said to Kevin, you can't bring him around every day, once or twice a week, that's it.
What's weird was I wasn't even asking him to come.
He just showed up.
Well, and being a working mom, Peg, and you and I are in the same boat, we have kids, and every once in a while, I bring the kids to work, either they have no one to watch them, or they're going to be downtown for something else, but it's not fair to Bill, and you know what? It's not fair to me to have them around. I can't be myself and work when they're there because mom mode kicks in.
See, that's exactly right. And we can all give our own examples and say, but for Adam LaRoche, he didn't feel that way. He felt that he got to hang out with his best friend every day at work, and he loved it. And a lot of players now are tweeting and expressing that, you know, these are family games. We play a family game. But they're forgetting that when it is convenient to say it's a business, they all say it's a business. I'm breaking my contract. I'm sitting out. I'm not going to report to camp. It's a business. So you can't have it both ways. You have to respect it is a business, and you are lucky enough to be playing a game, but you get paid a lot of money, and your employers can put their foot down about something.
Peggy, it sounds so sentimental that a man is saying his best friend is his son, so maybe that clouds our opinion a little bit. If his best friend was just a guy he went to grade school or high school with, and that guy showed up at the ballpark every day, somebody would say, hey, your best friend's a great guy, but come on.
But that's different. That's no blood relation. He's really making a stand for this, and I kind of respect that, but as Peggy said, your employer has every right to say, you know what?
It's a distraction.
It's totally taken away from your focus. 630 has texted in, the other players probably complained in the clubhouse because their wives wanted them to start babysitting their kids at the field as well.
That could be it. That could be it.
Could you imagine that it goes from one guy is allowed to have his son, and the next thing you know, all the other wives are saying, well, hang on a second. I want to be there. I want to come hang out. I want to come, you know, take infield practice. Take Susie, too. You know, Kenny's got a good point. Where do you draw the line?
Right.
He's trying to draw the line. It's not a popular decision. And if it's a convenient time for Adam LaRoche to also call it quits, well, then it's a convenient time. Listen, a lot of people have a lot of reasons as to why they finally decide to retire. And sometimes it's things like this that help push them out the door, and because they weren't going to do it on their own.
Well, I don't know what to think. It's, you know, I understand him being a dad and wanting to hang with his kid, but
his best,
you know,
friend.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
it really is sad. And, you know, it's hard because there's a 14-year-old kid.
And he should have a best friend other than his dad. That's what makes me sad, I think.
Right.
You know, my boys asked me the exact same thing. They're 13, going on 14. All their friends are 14, 8th grade, and they said the exact same thing. Doesn't he hang out with his own friends in the summer? Doesn't he have his own friends? And I'm sure he does. Yeah, I know in Washington he used to go to class only in the wintertime, and then the school allowed Adam to take Drake out of school.
Wow.
And he had a Sylvan Learning Center tutor travel with him and hang with him, you know, from, oh gosh, February, March, April, May, until they were out of school. I mean, my question was, isn't this kid getting to the age where he's supposed to hate his parents?
Yes. Good point. I can't get my kids to come to work with me anymore.
We haven't heard from Drake yet. He's probably like, oh, thank God.
Saved by Kenny Williams.
Peggy, when I was 14, my best friend was Joe Pepitone. He never invited me to go out and play ball with him. Rude.
Peggy, thank you so much. NBC5 Chicago, you can see her. We love you. Peggy, thanks so much.
Thanks, Peg.
Anytime, guys.
Peggy Kaczynski.
Joe Pepitone, really?
Yeah, we were best friends, but he didn't even tell me he played baseball. We just did stuff together. Weird. All right, a quick break. If you have any thoughts on this, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. We'll take those calls and texts in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
A couple of texts which really point something out on the other side of this Adam LaRoche, Drake LaRoche, LaRoche saga. 312 says, imagine how the son feels now that his dad is no longer a Major League Baseball player.
Oh.
Adam used his kid to step down.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah. He hasn't been delivering, as Peggy Kaczynski pointed out. And this one, it really just kind of brought it home for me. Has anybody thought about the pressure that this kid has to be under because his dad retired from the sport he loved because of him?
That's a lot, isn't it?
It's wrong on a lot of levels here.
There's also things that happen behind the scenes in baseball and all of sports that I'm not positive a 15-year-old is ready to see.
14.
Or 14 even more so. Maybe they're not quite ready to process, you know?
You know, just with us, you know, sometimes we do some things off the air that might not be good for a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah.
My kids are used to everything, but, you know, your typical 14-year-old boy. And it just, it wouldn't be fair to put your coworkers under that
right.
in that situation.
Right.
These ball players, you know, if they come off the field and they've done something really bad, it's like they're watching their behavior because someone else's kid is there.
Everything's
it doesn't
changed.
Seem right.
I know.
Occasionally, and Kenny Williams didn't say all or nothing.
He said scale it back a bit.
Which
we don't
is,
want him here every day. Bring him in every once in a while, but just not every day.
And that's very big of Kenny Williams to say.
Right. And it seems like there were some players, because of Kenny Williams' statements, where he didn't want to talk about who was complaining. So that means some of the players were, but now all the players are coming to Adam LaRoche's side saying, hey, it wasn't me. I love your kid. I wish he was here more often.
And in this whole stupid fake Twitterverse that we're on, it makes these ball players look good, like, oh, yeah, they're all about the family. Yeah, you're all about the family when you're with the family.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, baseball is a family game. To spectate
mm-hmm.
or to play catch in the backyard.
But,
professional baseball. It's professional.
I know.
It's not family baseball.
No, it's not family baseball. All right. How about this? A quick break. Kim Gordon with the news, and then more show coming your way after that. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. All right. We seem to have this theme going on the show, Wendy, where we have either record breakers, world record breakers, somebody who's about to break a world record. Our next guest, Anaya Lee Willibus, is the youngest published chapter book author in the entire United States. Her first book, The Day Mohan Found His Confidence, was published when she was only, are you ready, 8 years old. It's an amazing story. Anaya, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How do you write a book at 8 years of age? I'm way older than that. And I've always wanted to write a book. What makes you want to write a book?
Well, I've always loved to read and write, and literature, as I always say, is always going to be a part of life.
And we've read what you've written,
Anaya. You're smarter than we are at eight,
too. Oh, way smarter. Far, far smarter. we pale in comparison to your smartness. But there's such a huge difference between sitting down and writing or typing something out and actually having it published. How did that happen? You wrote something and you were happy with it, and then it's a book. What happened there?
Well, my parents and my family have always been very supportive, and after my trip to Guyana, South America, where my parents are from, it pretty much inspired me, the rich culture, to write my book.
Yeah.
Now tell us a little about the day Mohan found his confidence. What is the story about Mohan?
It's about a young boy named Mohan and the challenges he faces at home and school. And the book is more about introducing a different culture, the Guyanese culture, to Americans through reading.
And you're 9 years old now, but when you wrote this book, you were 8. What grade were you in then?
I was in 3rd grade.
In 3rd grade. And school is sometimes hard, isn't it? And I don't mean academically. I mean like finding friends and getting along with people. And there are a lot of judgments passed, even in 3rd grade, aren't there?
Yes, that was a part of the book that I wrote about as well.
And Anaya, when the book is done, there's a process that authors go through where you shop it around from publisher to publisher to publisher, and then a lot of times you'll get a rejection notice. Somebody will read your book and go, yeah, you know what, I'm glad you did this, but it's not right for us. Did you have any of that kind of an experience where publishers said, we like what you did, but we're not interested in your book?
Well, my mom helped to do the publishing, so it wasn't that challenging for us to get it published.
Although, how sad would it have been if your mom said, no, this isn't what we're looking for? That would have been awful, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been terrible.
You get most 8-year-olds who, like, sit outside and make a little makeshift lemonade stand. You could have been out there selling your autographed copies of your books. Did you do that?
Yes.
You did. That is adorable.
Perfect.
All right, so you are from New York, correct?
Yes.
And you wrote a little poem dedicated to the president of Brooklyn. His name is Mr. Adams. And you wrote a poem to him for Black History Month. And you got a little award and for your literary contribution to the borough over there, didn't you?
Yes.
How exciting was that?
It was great because that's my 5th award.
You've won. This is your 5th award. Is that right?
Yes.
What are the other awards? Are they also for writing?
Yes, all of them are.
Nicely done. Very nice.
Tell us a little about this poem that you wrote, I Am a Child of Thee. I'm sure you know it by heart. Can you give us a little reading, a little bit of it?
Well, the poem is basically about Black History Month. It talks about the slaves and their experiences and how my foreparents, I appreciate what they have done to make the path for us to be free. So I'll read a line from it.
Perfect.
Thy back is broken and hip weakens from lashes. The clouds try to trick me with its dark shadows, leading me to a hopeless place, forever in bondage. You can never keep me. My body tells a different story than my mind. Take my body as your swine, but my mind is beyond your reach. My mind lingers in a place of shuchi, a place of sunshine and better days.
Wow. And you wrote that by, like, your mom didn't help, your dad didn't, friends didn't help. You wrote all of that?
Yes.
Not bad.
And there's more of it. You are really an inspiration. Do you have any advice for any young kids, which, you know, we don't get a lot of young kids listening to the show, but there are a lot of parents. What can we do to inspire our children to be as amazing as you?
Well, I always say to have balance, because though technology may be great as well, when you have balance, you can incorporate literature, technology, and sports all at the same time, and too much of one thing is not good for you.
It's keeping everything in balance.
That's
absolutely
the key. Yeah.
So are you into sports as well?
Yes, my favorite sport is soccer.
Awesome.
Good call.
And have you thought about, other than being a writer and a author, is there anything else you have thought about doing when you get to be of adult stature like us?
Well, I probably will become a soccer player as well. My dad is always, he always makes sure me and my younger brother have balance, and he's very supportive of my soccer playing in my book.
That's fantastic. That's great.
You should write poems on your soccer ball and then kick it towards the opponent, and then when they're, you know, busy reading it, maybe it could help you score a goal.
Not a bad move. Ane, have you been in a situation where you've been in a bookstore and you've looked over and there's your book in the bookstore? I can't imagine what a thrill that would be.
Yes. In Guyana, when I visited for the second time last year, we went to a bookstore, and in the front shelf, it was sitting there.
And there's your book.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
You know,
good for
what's
you.
Even weirder is going on Amazon to buy something, and lo and behold, you'll find The Day Mohan Found His Confidence, which is where you can find Anaya Lee Willibus's book. And, you know, something Willibus rhymes with syllabus. Did you have to use a syllabus when you were writing your poems or your book?
No.
God, she's that
good. Too smart for a syllabus.
That's you are. What are you working on next, Anaya?
Well, I am working on my next book.
Can you give us a preview, or are you afraid Wendy will steal your idea?
I won't steal it.
She might. Be careful.
Well, it will be out in May, but for now it's just going to be kept a surprise.
All right.
Oh, you are
that's
adorable.
That's the way to do it. Very smart.
You're a smart businesswoman as well.
And Anaya, I know you. There's somebody, you have a dream of meeting somebody very high up in the ranks. Can you tell us who your dream is to meet?
Well, I hope to meet the President Barack Obama.
Yeah? Wouldn't that be nice?
Have you sent him a book, Anaya? Because that's a good way to meet him.
Yes, my mom has sent it.
I thought you might get nominated for the Supreme Court. I was shocked when I did not see your name on the list. I thought that would have been a good call. They don't have any 9-year-olds on the Supreme Court. It's time we change that. Well, Anaya, honestly, what a job you're doing to be 9 years old and already have a published book. And do me a favor, clear this up, because I'm not positive exactly what this means. It says you're the youngest published chapter book author. That just means like your traditional stories, right? Not just a poem or something short, but an actual full-fledged book, right? That's what that is?
Yes.
Wow.
You know, while we're on the radio, we can get instant texts of what people say, and there are some that I would like to share with you. One of them is just plain and simply, I'm in tears, because it is really touching to hear just such a bright young woman who has accomplished so much at 9.
Yeah.
And there's someone else that says, my IQ is so embarrassed of itself right now that I have to stop listening to this interview and go pick up branches in the yard or watch fish in the aquarium. Gee, this kid is too much.
How about that?
So congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, Anaya, keep up the good work. We're big fans.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And we'll look forward to your new book. Thank you so much.
How about that? Published at 8 years old, a full-on book. And not something, when you read this, I mean, she just read you a little bit of her poem, I Am a Child of Thee. It seems like it was written by an adult. It does not seem like a child wrote any of this.
I can't get over this. I just should retire. I'm going to bring my kids to work, and then I'm going to retire.
Right.
Listen to this next stanza of I Am a Child of Thee. I know you fought a good fight. Battle is long and strong with a true vision of whom I will be one day, a reflection of your soul, a body built for war and battle. But mentally, I face tomorrow knowing you are a part of thee. Written about slavery and her four, what did she say? Not her four.
Four parents.
Wasn't that a
them.
Cool little way
and I
of
was going to
saying...
correct her math, and I was going to say, I think you have two parents, but I let that one slide. She also is incredible with the commas and all the punctuation. Like, remember when you were 8 years old and you would just throw in a, you just go, I'll just put a comma here and see what happens. I don't know where they go. I'll just put one. It's all perfect.
We should just hang it up now, Bill.
I know,
really.
It's time.
So look for her. You'll find her. Her name is Anaya Lee Willibus. She had to have known what a syllabus was,
I think,
right?
So. I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure she used one.
Probably.
Go to Amazon.com. You can find her books and her one, The Day Mohan Found His Confidence, is up there, and be looking for another one this summer that's going to be a surprise.
Yep.
All right then.
A quick break. We'll reevaluate our lives.
And the word reevaluate.
And the word reevaluate. And come back in a minute. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We've got to change the Allstate Hometown Voices tour to something that rhymes. You know, you got Bartolini, Manfredini. It should be Tourini.
All right. Well, I will make that change. Kevin, make that change for us for next time. We'll get that.
Only Edie's.
That's how it should be.
We talked to Naya Lee Willibus, who was pretty amazing. At the age of 8, she wrote a book. 9 years old now. She's in fourth grade. She wrote this unbelievably touching and moving poem, I Am a Child of Thee, in honor of Black History Month, to the president of the Brooklyn Borough.
Mm-hmm.
And she was recognized by the president, Mr. Adams, for her literary contribution to the borough. And she was pretty amazing. And inspiring.
Sure.
And someone has texted something that confuses me.
What is it?
847 says, can't help but wonder how annoying this kid's parents are. I don't understand that.
I hate to speak for a texter, but my guess is some parents are prone to brag a little bit. So if you had a kid who was 8 years old and had a book published, maybe it would come up a lot in conversation. I'm guessing, maybe.
But what is the problem with that? And I mean, we talked to her. It didn't seem like it was a JonBenet Ramsey kind of thing where she's being pushed by her mom or her dad.
Right.
It seemed like she really had a thirst for knowledge and she
and
loved
a gift
to play
for
soccer.
Writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's my guess as to what that texture means. I'm not positive, but I'm sure you know somebody whose kid has achieved something.
Yeah, but we talked to her. We didn't talk to the mom.
We did not talk to the mom. Although you heard the mom at the very end say, tell them thank you and to never call us again. You heard that at the end, right?
I did hear her whisper that.
There was a little bit of that in the background.
But trust me, as much as you want to push a kid, they're going to rebel against you at some point and not listen to your... Trust me, I've tried really hard to push my kids into things.
Yeah.
But you follow your passion, and that's what this little girl has.
She's too good. You can tell by her style, by her writing style. I'm telling you, I haven't read much of what she's written, but what I have read... I'm reading it going, this is like a seasoned professional. It doesn't remind me of anything anyone I knew was writing when they were 8 or 9 years old.
I mean, come on. When we were 8, it was like C-spot run into the doghouse.
It was a little bit above that, but not a whole lot above that.
It's pretty impressive.
I'm very impressed by her. Very impressed. And I like the fact that she would not divulge what her second book was about.
See, I think that's a mistake. And if I could, help her out with a little marketing. Because you want to get people excited about it. Don't give away the whole concept or the title, because you probably don't have a working title.
Right.
But you want to promote what your next book is.
Right.
You know, at first I thought, well, maybe she hasn't written it yet. But if it's coming out this spring, or what did she say, this summer? She said this spring, I thought.
That's coming very, very soon. But if she's a normal kid, she will do it on the night before it needs to be published.
How about that?
Right.
Did you ever work early on a project?
If I did it, those times were few and far between. I always did almost all my homework the night before.
Because it's wasted time. Why would you work on something in advance?
Right. What if the world ends? Then I wasted all my time.
Well, I didn't think of it that way. I just thought there are other pressing issues and
sure.
games of tag that you had to play.
Sure.
I mean, really, why... I what's terrible is being a mom and trying, especially, you know, when your kids have ADHD, they bring up this thing called chunking, where if there's like a big, huge project, you do a little bit,
a little bit at a time. Right.
I can't teach that to my kids. I don't even know how to do that.
I'm amazed at how my daughters, their whole scholastic careers have done stuff so far in advance. And I don't volunteer the information.
Is Terry like that?
A little bit. Yeah, not as much as my kids are, but yeah, they like to get things done so they don't have to worry about them. But I was always like Sunday night at 10 o'clock. That's when I started my weekend homework all the time.
And sometimes you were up till 2, 3 in the morning, but you would do it.
Yeah.
And this sounds ridiculous, but a lot of times I think that stress and anxiety is what made me do a better job.
Oh, sure. Because there's adrenaline. You go, it's now or never. I got to do it now.
I got no emotion, no energy, no enthusiasm when I do it early.
Right.
Why would you do something early?
I don't know. But there are people operate that way. Those successful people. I don't know who they are. Who needs them? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Then we'll find out what Roe and Anna have coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.